Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight in the big program. We're going to be talking to you from Atlantic City, New Jersey. That's right, Chris Christie land. Conservative world at its best. Tolls, and of course more tolls to get here to Atlantic City. But we're here to talk to our friends at the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, who are holding their Joint Council 53 annual meeting. And like last week when we were in Las Vegas talking to our IBEW friends, we're getting the word out, getting out of the studio, talking to workers, talking to their representatives. So we're looking forward to the next 2 days. We're going to be here today and tomorrow back in the studio live on Wednesday. Also going to talk about the 60 Minutes piece. Interesting report they had last night. We're going to be talking about the Romney plan for the nation, or the lack of a plan. Also going to talk about voter suppression, which front and center. Several studies out, several new ones pointing out what we've been talking about for the longest time. Who's being affected by this? Well, of course, it's the minorities, it's the poor, it's the seniors. It is exactly the folks that they want to hold from voting. Also going to talk about GOP Vice Presidential Hopeful Paul Ryan, who was, granny booed him. I mean, what do you got to do for granny to boo you at the AARP National Annual Conference there in New Orleans? Well, the comments over Medicare. I mean, front and center, this is a guy that I think seniors get. They get it. On a fundamental level, this guy wants to destroy Medicare, wants to, privatize it, voucherize it, whatever you want to call it. That's the goal. We're seeing the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. Some more reports and more studies to tell us that, yeah, there's a problem. I guess we already knew that. But the question then becomes, who's going to make this situation better? Is it going to be Barack Obama? Will it be Mittens? Or is the situation, as some have told me, hopeless? Because both parties are controlled, bought, and paid for by the wealth class. And until we do something about money and politics, until we do something about the Koch brothers, until we do something about the wealth class, it's going to be business as usual. Also, going to with your thoughts, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. As always, you can email me. I do respond to every email personally. Of course, this weekend, had a fantastic weekend. It was great to be back home from Las Vegas. I like going to Vegas. It's one of those places that, total stimulus, just too much. And then, coming here to Atlantic City, kind of the same vein, but it's all about the working people. It's all about, it's all about undoing the last 40 years of hand everything to the few at the expense of the many. And this weekend, on Saturday, we showed up in Philadelphia for a voter ID rally. And what it really was more than a rally. It was more getting people out in the streets, getting folks knocking on doors and leafleting and talking to voters and, of course, registering voters. You talk about numbers. You talk about, we know that this segment of the population, they're going to be suppressed in this vote. We know that. The studies are there. The information's there. But until you actually look into the eyes of somebody, until you actually see them and communicate and say, you know what, your vote is being suppressed from. It's being taken away. And for them to go, well, I didn't know. I hadn't heard. And they say, but I've voted every election my entire life. Why now? And that's the question, why now? Because I do believe the Republicans understand that if they can hold down the vote, if they can suppress the minorities, the poor, the elderly, if you can hold those votes down, votes of people who generally look to government for help, just for help, not a handout, for help. Those are people who generally vote for Democrats. And you look at all of the rhetoric that's been coming out, especially the last week since the Romney video. Well, the 47%, they're dependent. Now, these are people who understand that we're all in this together. But it was a great event on Saturday. We were in Philadelphia. The Pennsylvania FFL-CIO had their RV there. Arlene Holt Baker, an executive vice president with the National AFL-CIO, was on hand. There were hundreds of volunteers. And just swarms of people. We got some pictures up at our Facebook page. I look at this and you see all of these folks who are just ready to go in and register. And you talk to the people who work at the at the voter, at the driver's license bureau, the PennDOT bureau, and you know they're like, you know, we're just overwhelmed. You know, they've thrown out these mandates with very little training, with very little direction. In fact, you know, it wasn't too long ago when they said, well, we're going to give those frontline workers the discretion to give voter IDs or not if they don't have the exact stuff. So we're going to give them discretion. And I said on this program, that is a horrible idea. Because, you know, if I'm the worker, if I'm the person on the front line, I'm going to go, whoa, 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 you know, I'm going to protect my behind. And they bet on that. But, you know, the event this weekend, I talked to a whole bunch of people, veterans, you know, women, you name it. We saw people who could not believe that the Republicans in this state are going this far. And, you know, one of the weird things that came back, and, you know, the organizers of the event had T-shirts, and I got one for my daughter, who's 10, and, you know, she's showing some interest in politics. And I gave it to her, and the shirt said, "My right, my vote." And, you know, basically just to protect your rights, protect your vote. And she, you know, she asked my wife, who is completely apolitical. She wants nothing to do with it. She, you know, she understands on the conceptual level. You know, she gets it. She's going to vote, you know, who's going to be best, you know, for the country and all that. But, you know, in talking about it and doing all that, she wants no part of it. She actually had, and this just, I had to eavesdrop. She actually had like a 20-minute discussion with my daughter about why this election, this one in particular, is so vital and so vitally important, to, especially her and to my wife, to women especially. And she said, you know, and leave it to my wife to be the good mother, the good parent. You know, didn't get into all of the details. My daughter's 10. You're not going to get into the whole abortion conception. You're not going to get into all of that discussion. But you're going to, she went into, look, you know, we as women have not had the same rights as everyone else from the founding of this country. It has been a constant struggle. And there's a kids movie, and I don't even know which one it is that my wife watches with the kids, where they're, you know, it's an older movie, and there were women who were marching and you were protesting, and my wife explained that, you know, those were the suffragettes. Those were the women who in, you know, just in the last 100 years or less have said, you know what? We want the right to vote. We want to be like everybody else. And as my wife pointed out, you know, look, a lot of that's under attack right now. A lot of that movement forward that women of past generations have fought for, under assault. The ability for women to have access to care for their bodies, under assault. Now understand, and this is what blew my mind, is my wife is not me. She is not the political one. She's not the one to go out on the picket line. She's not the one to go out and protest. She's not the one to call her congressman, any of that stuff. But she gets the assault. She gets the attack. She understands. She's seen it. And it's not because she's married to me, and because we don't usually talk about it. You know, I got this program. This is where I come to vent, and we have great conversations here. But my wife, she's like, I don't want to hear it. Save that material. You'll need that. But for at least 20 minutes, she went on about, you know, why this election, this one in particular, is important for women. Because all of those things that the right has been whispering to themselves in their little cloakrooms and their little secret clubs and their gated communities, now they're emboldened to pursue. Now they're emboldened to go after. They want to go after contraception. They want to go after a woman's right to choose. They want to go after the woman's right to vote. And I guarantee you that's coming. And what's encouraging to me, and I hope it's encouraging to you, is that, you know, someone like my wife, who, again, apolitical, sees this, understands it on a visceral level. This is not something you can advertise for. This isn't something I can come and tell you on the radio to be upset about. You're gonna feel it in your gut, as she does. And that's why I think this election, you know, the Republicans had better watch themselves. Because they are working on making themselves the outlier party for some time. And I hope that happens. And not because I'm anti-Republican, because there are some things, that some core tenets that they used to hold that I believe in. I believe in paying your bills. I believe in being personally responsible. I don't even know that's a Republican thing. I think that's universal. But if you had to pick some core tenets, I believe in a strong military. I believe in paying, you know, paying our bills. Fiscal responsibility. I'm right there. But this hasn't been that party for some time. What they have turned into is the old stale male white party. I mean, that's really what it is turned into. Who want to take this nation back to a time that never was, but they've got it in their head, this Norman Rockwell vision of America. And look, I love that vision. I love the idea of this country being exceptional. I love the idea of us being the number one nation in the world. I love that. And I want to make it that. I want to believe with all my heart and soul that this is going to be the greatest place in the world for my kids to grow up, my grandchildren, and into the future. But if I listen to my friends on the right who talk about American exceptionalism, it's because of, well, we were born here, and it's a birthright because of what our founders gave us and what the past generations gave us. And yeah, that makes us exceptional. But what truly makes us exceptional is every generation makes those sacrifices for the next generation. Every generation goes, you know what? I want to make sure that my kids get the very best education, the very best workplace, the very best, you know, you name it, healthcare, you name it, whatever it is. We want the very best for our kids, as I do believe every person in this world does. But I think what makes this nation exceptional is the decisions that we make, the policies that we pursue to make sure that, you know what, that happens. And this past week when I was in Las Vegas talking to the folks at the IBEW, you know, that's kind of the message that I laid out. Look, this nation is exceptional because of people like me. I grew up in a housing project, and now I live in a neighborhood with doctors and lawyers, and why is that? What made that happen? Was it because I'm of such strong intestinal fortitude and I have such strong will? Is that the reason? No, not necessarily. It's because we had policy early on in my life that made sure that I got fed. I had a roof over my head. There was an opportunity for education. There's an opportunity that if I worked hard and played by the rules that I would benefit and I would be able to move ahead. That's the America that I want again. That's the America that I want for my children. That's the exceptional place. I want that American dream. I want that ability for them to go, you know what? There is a shot for me. And what's going on is we've got these Republicans who from day one when this president took office saying we're going to make him fail. We're going to stand in the way. We're going to do what we can do to make sure that he is a one-term president. And you look at what they've done since 2010. They talked about jobs, jobs, jobs. Nothing of the sort. What we have seen is obstruction, gridlock, delay, everything they could possibly do to slow this and grind this system to a halt because that works for them. Understand, scorched earth works well for the Republicans because they're the ones saying, hey, government doesn't work. So when they cause it to not work, they can turn around and say, see, it doesn't work. It's amazing stuff. But we're here in Atlantic City, New Jersey, the Caesars Resort here. The whole program going to be here talking to some Teamsters, going to be here talking about issues, policies, you name it. If you want to email me, you can do that, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Of course, if you missed any portion of the program, TheRickSmithShow.com, that's where you can get the podcast. Quick break, right back after this. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. Workers, from the unionized to the unemployed, were an enthusiastic part of the first anniversary celebration of Occupy Wall Street on September 17th in New York City. WIN's Melinda Tuhus was there and files this report.
Within the intentional chaos of the attempted reoccupation of Wall Street, as protesters snarled traffic in the financial district, Sam Talbot with Unite Here Local 100 in New York stood out, waving a labor banner and leading what he called a swirl of protest. Early in the morning, he explained what his affinity group was planning.
We want to do a little tour of some bad employers and union busters. We're going to go protest at Chipotle. They, you know, they won't make a deal with the CIW, the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, to pay a penny more a pound for the tomatoes, so that, you know, farm workers can get out of horrible conditions, or at least improve a little bit. The post office, they're close. You know, they're trying to close. Still trying to close all sorts of postal jobs, shut them down, and also the NLRB, because we want the right to organize for all workers.
Tammy Bick was a stalwart with Occupy New Haven, which created an encampment on the green in the heart of downtown and held it for 6 months before being evicted by city authorities.
I'm here to show people that they can empower themselves and that they can take back this country and that they can realize that we do not need to depend on greed, consumerism, and lies, and nothing but the bottom line being the important thing.
Turnout was hard to gauge, but likely between 1,000 and 2,000, along with hundreds of police who harassed the demonstrators and by day's end had arrested 185 of them, many of whom were randomly plucked off the sidewalk. Vic saw a contradiction there.
Unfortunately, the police still don't understand that they are pawns and that they're being used. They don't realize that in Scranton, PA, the police were knocked down to minimum wage. It's going to happen all over this country. You're going to be happy just to have a job.
Carol Brown lives in the Bronx and lost her receptionist job when the work was outsourced. Now she works temp jobs. She's a strong supporter of the focus on the 99% versus the 1%.
We got to focus on that. Because that's like a way of talking about class. We got to focus on the people running the economy. It's usually they always attack the people on the bottom. They always go after race and gender and stuff. Because, you know, they always bring up that kind of stuff. That divides everybody. We're all workers. We're everybody's together. We got to focus on people on top who are controlling everything.
Melinda Tuhus, Workers Independent News, New York.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I couldn't make a statement in all good faith and say to you that there is no voter fraud in the United States and there is no voter fraud in Pennsylvania.
Pink fluffy unicorns dancing on rainbows. Pink fluffy unicorns dancing on rainbows. Pink fluffy unicorns.
Yeah, I look at her and boy, yeah, it's amazing how we see. Yeah, you got this Carol Eichle out in the front of this, being the face of suppressing the vote. And, you know, I go back to what my wife was telling my daughter over the weekend, that, you know, look, it's been in the last 100 years that women have not been allowed to vote, that women have been fighting for these rights that right now we have, that they're under attack. And look, from my point of view, I don't want to live in that world where my daughter doesn't have equal opportunity. I don't want to live in that place where my girls don't have the same opportunity as anyone else, don't have the same voice, the same health care, the same rights. And I don't use privilege. I don't use absolute rights. Life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. I mean, it's, and like I said, I mean, for my wife to go off on a lecture series like the one she went on this weekend, where she absolutely gets it on a visceral level, where she knows the attacks are real, the attacks are pointed directly at her and my daughters, and every woman in this state, and in this country, and every working person. At the end of the day, and I say this a lot because it's true. If you're not seated at the table, if you don't have a voice in what's going on, if you're not in the place where they make decisions, you're on the menu. You're what's being divided up. You're what's being divvied up and destroyed. And you go back to this whole thing with Romney, the 47%, oh, they pay no taxes, and, well, they need to take personal responsibility for their lives. I mean, it's ridiculous. You look at this new report out from the Institute for Taxation and Economic Policy, who have pointed out that the reality, the 1% in this country not only pay a very low federal rate, but they also pay a lower tax rate than low-income families. So the people who are struggling at the bottom, the minimum wage people, the people who are busting their behinds just to try and make ends meet, well, you know what? They're paying a higher tax rate than the 1%. You look at states like Florida, for instance. where the top 1% pays about 2.1% state tax, while the bottom 20% pay 13.5% of their income. And Romney thinks this is fair. Romney thinks this is the right thing to do. You look at places like Illinois, where, you know, the top 1% pay a little over 4%, the bottom 20%, 13% of their income. Nevada, another one, 1.6% paid by the Sheldon Adelsons of the world, while the person sweeping the street, the person picking up the garbage, 8.9%. I mean, you look at Texas, there's the Rick Perrys of the world and the oil magnates and all the big wigs, 4%. People at the bottom, or I mean 3%. The people at the bottom, over 12.5%. I mean, and you look at what happens. You look at our budget in the state, in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. We keep shifting away from education. We keep shifting away from the state funding higher ed and K through 12 and infrastructure. We keep shifting away from that. While what we're doing is enriching the top. More handouts for the businesses. More handouts for the 1%. More, hey, you know, we got to make sure that that Delaware loophole is wide open. Got to make sure that we're funding the gas drillers. You know, the District of Columbia is the only place in the country where the top 1% pays a higher tax rate than the poorest 20%. It's pretty amazing, isn't it? Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Have the trucks. Are you tired of hearing we can't invest in improving our roads and rebuilding our bridges? Are you tired of the argument we can't invest in our children's future by funding education? The mainstream corporate-controlled message we're being force-fed is we're broke. Sorry, can't fund education, we're broke. Sorry, we can't have a 21st century infrastructure, we're broke. Sorry, can't have access to quality health care for all, we're broke. Well, we're not broke. We can invest. We can build a better tomorrow. To find out how, join the Rick Smith Show Saturday, October 6th at the Cumberland County Democratic Headquarters, 46 West Lowther Street in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. Join us for this free Rick Smith Show event Saturday, October 6th at the Cumberland County Democratic Headquarters, 46 West Lowther Street in Carlisle. We can and we will build a better future for our children. For more details, go to thericksmithshow.com.
Are you a fashionista? Do you live for shoes? Is style your middle name? If you have experienced any of the following symptoms, crying, anxiousness, fits of worry, sleeplessness, card cutting, bill shredding, high interest rising balances, and repeated general avoidance, you are in luck. We can help. And the best part? Saving never goes out of style. Transfer your high interest and department store balances to PSECU. Our Visa balance transfer has a low 2.9 annual percentage rate. Good through New Year's Eve of 2013. We don't charge you a transfer fee, and you can roll up to $20,000 in balances if you qualify. That's a lot of swag. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit pfecu.com/visa for complete program details.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of the Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Check out the website, ricksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So another one of these moments where you go, really not surprised whatsoever. You got Romney, who was doing a forum with Univision last week where they were going, you know, we want the candidates to come out and we'd talk about the issues to us. Turns out that Romney didn't want to talk in front of the people at Univision unless he could pack the crowd well with his people. And they bust in folks from campuses across the state of Florida, tons of people they packed into the crowd, only gave the Univision people 35 minutes. And the host had actually introduced Romney saying, you know, he's agreed to give us 35 minutes, but, you know, the president, you know, he was going to give us an entire hour. So Romney threw a temper tantrum, evidently, wouldn't refuse to come out until they retaped the opening. And not surprising. I mean, it is how they are. And now during the time, you know, the questions that they were asking him, he dodged them. It's much like the 60 Minutes interview I watched yesterday. Every question that would come up, it was always, you know, what would you do? Well, you know, the president hasn't done this. That wasn't the question. The question is what would you do? And I look at this and I go, well, is it any surprise? And this isn't the first time that Romney's packed the crowd full of his own. This is a very Republican thing to do. I remember the Bush years where they had a press conference. How many people remember the press conferences where they had staffers posing as press people asking questions? But, you know, Romney did pretty much the same thing back in June when the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials had their conference, you know, brought him in to talk to their supporters. You know, what did he do? He packed the crowd. And, you know, I guess, you know, you want to talk to a friendly audience, and you know, even if you got to pay them. And that's kind of what we saw there. So good news, I guess, if you want to look at it this way, another year of tax returns to look at. This time, 2011 released the tax returns. Turns out Romney paid about 14.1%. I still want to see, like his father did, I want to see 12 years worth of tax returns. Because I'm looking at this, I'm going 14.1%. Yeah, there's some problems here. There's some problems. I give him credit for being very charitable. You know, that's part of what he does, and good for him. Donated nearly 30% of his income, a little over $4 million on a $13.6 million, which came mostly from investments, mostly from capital gains. He paid almost $2 million in taxes on that $13.6 million, if you will. Claimed this, you know, he donated the $4 million, claimed $2.25 million of those charitable contributions. Mike, first question is exactly explain this to me, because, you know, why would you not take all of the charitable contributions that you put forth? Just a question. But if you looked at it, if you looked at the fact that he's claiming he paid 14.1% tax, what would have happened had he taken all of the deductions that he was able to take, all of the loopholes, all of all the things there for him? What would he have made? What would he have paid? Would he have paid the 14.1? And the answer is no. He would have paid closer to 9%. 9%. Now think about how many working people in this country pay a lot more than 9% on $40,000, $50,000, $60,000. Explain that to me, because I'm struggling here. Struggling to figure out how it is that this guy, now understand, he said, look, you know, in order to be president, he said, look, I don't pay more than I'm legally due. He said, and frankly, if I had paid more than are legally due, he said, I don't think I'd be qualified to become president. He said, look, He says, I think people want me to follow the law and pay only what the tax code requires. Now, think about this for a second. He's saying, look, people want me to follow the law. People want me to do only what I have to do, what's legally required. Yet 14.1 is what he paid when, had he followed what, well, what he could have, it would have been 9%. So has he disqualified himself from being president? And what's the point in that? Why pay more than you had to? Well, I mean, understand. This was for show. This was for him to say, you know what, I paid 14.1%. I didn't pay the 13.9 like I did the year before, or the 9 that I could have. I'm better than that. My question is what happens next year? What happens in 2 years? Is he going to be able to claim that other, what, 1.2, 1.6? Is he going to be able to claim that excess in future years? I mean, is this some? Because that's a question I think we need to know. And I looked at his statements last night on 60 Minutes, and it's just, it's mind-blowing. He was asked straight up by Scott Pelley. He said, look, is it fair to a guy who's making $50,000 a year and paid a higher tax rate than you? Is it fair that someone like him who made, you know, $20 million last year, the year of 2010, and only paid, what, 13.9% in federal taxes? Is that fair? And Romney went on, tried to dodge the question. Well, you know, it's a low rate, and one of the reasons why capital gains rate is low is capital's already been taxed. And, you know, the whole spiel about, well, you know, we need the money to be invested. We need people to feel that they're going to be able to get a return. So Pelley, and to his credit, and, you know, I very rarely give those guys credit for asking a follow-up, because it's usually they throw the question out, they get the backwards deflecting answer, and then they move on. But he says, look, Pelley goes, so you think it's fair? And Romney goes, yeah, I think it's the right way to encourage economic growth, to get people to invest, to start business, to put people to work and all that. But yeah, he thinks it's the right way. Now, here's my problem with that argument, and I've heard it time and time again, which is if we don't give the investor class more, we don't give them the ability to be protected from risk, they're not going to. If we have the lowest tax rate possible, then, of course, it's the magic tonic. It is it's the panacea. Tax cuts are always the way to go. If we don't give them that, well, they're not going to invest. And the reality is there's almost no economic evidence of that happening. In fact, you know, the studies that I've seen have showed that during the years where we had a higher capital gains rate and during the years where we were actually taxing dividends as regular income, investment actually went up. I don't see where this whole, and look, the right has taken it on as a matter of political and religious faith that, you know, tax breaks and the lower rates are going to encourage investment. It hasn't happened. In fact, Wall Street has never been happier. We are seeing massive profits. We are seeing huge CEO bonuses and CEO pay. Is it trickling down? Is it getting down to the people who actually do the work and create the wealth? The answer is no, of course not. And you look at the fact between 1986 and 1997, long-term capital gains were taxed at close to 30%. 30%. Did that stop investment? No, wait a minute. If I remember right, those were some boom years. Those were some of the better years. And during the Clinton years, at the end there, he let it set at 20%. And like I said, dividends were taxed at regular income rates. Now, look at Warren Buffett's statement, and it's one of these things that you go back to. Do we need Warren Buffett to tell us there's class war going on? Do we need Buffett to tell us that his class is winning? No. Do we need him to tell us that we're working longer and harder for less and that the tax rates have benefited his ilk? Of course not. But he said, look, I've worked with investors for 60 years, and I've yet to see anyone, not even when capital gains rates were 39.9% in 76, 77. Shy away from a sensible investment because the tax rate was there. It has nothing to do with it, really. Look, at the end of the day, during the Clinton years when you saw the higher rates, investment was stronger. And I agree, we need to have a much higher capital gains rate, and we need to tax that as regular income. I'm of the mindset, look, why is it gambling winnings should be taxed at a different rate than, well, the money that I make busting my hump? Why is that the way we wanted to go? I don't think it is. But I look at this tax return, and for me, I'm one of the small minds. I'm one of the folks that Romney talks about having a small mind, because I do want to see those tax returns. I think we should demand to see them, and not stop and not relent until they're released. Because this tax return he just released, this was a setup. This was a softball. This was the oh, look how wonderful I am. He could have paid 9%. Why are we not angry about that? But the message all weekend is, oh, look how charitable he is. And look, I got no problem with people being charitable. I want them to be charitable. But at a time when we're destroying public education, at a time when we're denying health care to folks, I got a real problem. I got a real problem with the way things are going. And I think we should have some major, major questions about Romney and his tax returns. You know, is he going to file the amended tax return once he loses? I mean, is he going to get that money back? And if you go back to January, he estimated his income somewhere around $7 million lower than what it actually turned out to be. I mean, how does someone overestimate their income by $7 million? I'm not quite sure. And there's a whole bunch of other questions. You know, the Swiss bank account. How's that helping him? How's that hurting him? Explain to me how the Cayman Islands and Luxembourg. Why did you have that there? If it wasn't for the idea of avoiding paying taxes, why? I've yet to hear him say anything on that. And you know, he goes. He said, "Well, you know, I paid an average of 20% over the last 20 years, like this one." And again, if that's the case, if that's the honest truth, put it out there. But at the end of the day, here's what the problem I have is. You look at his payroll taxes. You look at what he paid in taxes on his income compared to what any working person in this country pays. He paid 0.2%. 0.2%. The average person in this country, the average working person in this country paid about 15%. When you take everything, all the deductions, you take everything into account. 0.2% is what I paid. And you and I, on average, about 15%. At some point, don't you think we need to have that Buffett rule that says, you know what, if you're making, I don't know, $200 million a year or $20 million, or you should pay a minimum, something? But the sad reality is, and this is one of those things that we talk about quite often here on the program, the more the Romneys of the world make, the more that they stuff in their own pockets, the more that they're able to game the system, the better it is off for them. I mean, the more tax breaks you're going to end up with. The top 1% of people in this country, that top 1%, they raked in about 24% of all tax breaks. I mean, that is just mind-blowing. You go to the top 10% who took over 40% of all the tax breaks, while the bottom 60%, the bottom majority in this country, 60%, saw just 20% of the tax breaks. And understand, when we redo the Tax Reform Bill of 86, which we know is coming, you can call it whatever you want. Call it the Tax Reform Bill of 2013, because we know it's coming. Both parties are priming us for it. And the argument is going to be, well, you know, if we can lower those tax rates a little bit, if we could just bring those down, we'll cut out those loopholes. Again, like we've done in the past. And for a short period of time, absolutely, it will bring in more tax revenue. And Romney brought it up in his talk on 60 Minutes. Oh, no, we don't want the wealthy paying less. We just want to pay a lower rate so that they can go back, pay their lobbyists to open up the same truck-sized loopholes that they can drive their Brinks truck through. Because we've seen this movie before. We've seen it before. 1986, they did the exact same thing. But what did they do in 86? Think about the working people of this country who got screwed over when they started taxing unemployment benefits for the very first time. Were there any lobbyists out there for the last 20 years saying, hey, we need to undo that? Uh-uh. They did take away some of the corporate loopholes. They did take away some of the wealth class loopholes. But guess what? The lobbyists brought them back. And brought them back in a big, big way. So, I mean, this just blows my mind that the top 10% of people in this country took over 40% of the tax breaks, while the bottom 60% of us, just 20%. And they want to take that. Now understand, you know, who got that? What were those? Well, the child deduction, the child tax credit, they want to do away with that. The home mortgage interest deduction, want to do away with that. And who does that help? Well, for the most part, those help working people. Folks like you and me, folks at the bottom of the economic scale, folks who are struggling to make ends meet. And at the end of it, you know, both parties are going to be the ones who push this through. This will be done in a bipartisan fashion as it was done back in 1986, which is why we need to fight back against this. We need to be the ones standing in the forefront, which is why we're here in Atlantic City talking to our friends here at the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, Pennsylvania Joint Council 53, about just that. You know, what's it going to take to get people, the working people in this country, to stand up? I mean, look at this. 60% of income earners in this country got just 20% of the tax breaks. When you've got the top 1% taking almost 24%. Think about that for a second. If 60% of the people in this country voted for sane, rational policy, do you think that's how the distribution of wealth would be sliced up? I don't think so. Which is why they absolutely need the media in this country to focus on, nonsense. I mean, we have really been led astray. We have really been pushed in the wrong direction. And I'm telling you, until we wake up, get educated, activated, and engaged, it's going to continue. Because the wealth class, they're not running out of money. There's plenty of money for advertising. There's plenty of money for misinformation. You know, and that's what my grandfather always said. You know, if a rich guy's going to take a buck out of his pocket to tell you need something or you don't, you better spend two to go the other way. It's that simple. And right now is that moment. And, the conversation they had on 60 Minutes last night, another one of those moments, very clear of what this election's about. And, look, I looked at Obama, and the guy looks tired. I mean, it's a tough job. I don't know why anybody would really want it, to be honest with you. But he looked rough. But, you know, you look at that, and again, what it is very, very clear. I think this election, and I'm hoping, going to be a very clear choice, and I'm hoping people overwhelmingly go to the polls if they're not suppressed, if they're not the one being kicked out of the voting booth. Anyway, going to take a quick break right back after this from Atlantic City, New Jersey at the Caesars Resort for the International Brotherhood of Teamsters Pennsylvania Conference, Joint Council 53 Conference, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. I'm the talk. And Medicare, while millions in the church, you don't have a dime to spare. Corporations give billions of welfare, while millions in the church, you don't have a dime to spare. Corporations give billions of welfare, while millions in the church, you don't have a dime to spare. Millions in the church, you don't have a dime to spare. Multi-billions in the church, you get not a dime to spare.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Are you tired of hearing we can't invest in improving our roads and rebuilding our bridges? Are you tired of the argument we can't invest in our children's future by funding education? The mainstream corporate-controlled message we're being force-fed is we're broke. Sorry, can't fund education, we're broke. Sorry, we can't have a 21st century infrastructure, we're broke. Sorry, can't have access to quality health care for all, we're broke. Well, we're not broke. We can invest. We can build a better tomorrow. To find out how, join the Rick Smith Show Saturday, October 6th at the Cumberland County Democratic Headquarters, 46 West Lowther Street in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. Join us for the free Rick Smith Show event Saturday, October 6th at the Cumberland County Democratic Headquarters, 46 West Lowther Street in Carlisle. We can and we will build a better future for our children. For more details, go to therickSmithShow.com. If you own a small business like me, you don't have time to spend doing all the paperwork, bookkeeping, and tax reporting. If you're like me, you want to focus all of your energy and attention on growing your business and succeeding. The paperwork's got to get done. The taxes have to be paid. Bob Miller, CPA, can help. Bob Miller and his experienced staff can handle all of your business's record keeping and tax preparation needs. Thanks to Bob Miller, CPA, and the year-round attention of his staff, I don't worry about surprises when the tax reports are due. Bob and his staff can help you, too. They can accurately and professionally manage your business's accounts or your personal finances to ensure that you have access to all of the tax savings opportunities available to you. Call Bob Miller's team today at 717-737-7617 or check them out on the web at www.bobmillercpa.com. That's bobmillercpa.com. Take the worry out of tax time. AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Do you advocate getting rid of the minimum wage? Would that create more jobs?
Absolutely, and it would help the poor, the people who need a job. The minimum wage is a mandate. We're against mandates, so why should we have it? No, it would be very beneficial.
Everything's raising but the wages. Everything's raising but the wages. Gasoline crosses and our haces. Everything's raising but the wages.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. We're in Atlantic City, New Jersey for Joint Council 53, Pennsylvania Conference of Teamsters Annual Convention, our conference meetings, talking about, hey, you know, how do we turn this thing around? How do we make sure that we have an economy that works for everyone? I look at one of the Romney advisors, is Babe Buchanan. Who again, you know, this frame that the right keeps throwing out here that, well, you know, we're a nation of dependent people. We're dependent on the government. She was out talking to the people at Meet the Depressed on Sunday and said, you know, we're in perilous times in this country, according to Babe Buchanan. We're looking at financial ruin, she said. We're looking at dependency, she said. We're looking at a nation of people dependent on their government, and this is what Barack Obama gives us. I'm going, really? Is that what he gave us? You want to talk about dependent? You want to talk about entitled? You want to talk about, well, look at Romney. Look at the banks. I look at this new report that's out from the Bank of International Settlements. They do a bunch of research as for the world's central banks. They looked at the bailouts of banks here in the U.S. and around the world. And what they found out? Not surprising, not really all that surprising. The banks that were the risky banks at the beginning, still the risky banks. The banks that weren't bailed out weren't quite as risky. And according to the report, they say we find no evidence that rescued banks reduced the riskiness of their new lending more than non-rescued banks in response to the crisis and public rescues. It went on to say, despite the crisis, rescued banks did not reduce their riskiness. I mean, and you compare that to the non-rescued banks. Do we need another one of these things to tell us that, oh, by the way, people who were risky to start, the people who brought this thing to its knees almost, are still doing it because, well, we're gonna do it again and again and again? And you look at the Republicans who are right now fighting diligently. Give them credit. I mean, they're representing their constituents quite well. You know, those folks in the banking industry, those folks on Wall Street, doing everything they can do to, well, they want to repeal Dodd-Frank. As minimal as that law would be, they want to starve it. They want to neuter it even before it gets off the ground. And look, I'm an advocate of going back to Glass-Steagall. That should be the minimum. But, you know, you look at how we've allowed these banks to get. We look at how much control we've allowed them to have. Is it any surprising that they're unmanageable? Does it surprise anyone that they have the kind of pull and the kind of power that they have in Washington? You know, I look at this recent report from the folks over at Think Progress. Found that the financial crisis, thanks to the bad conservative policies, have cost our economy almost $13 trillion. That's almost an entire year's of GDP. And yet you've got the Republicans and, well, Tim Pawlenty, who himself, one of the Romney surrogates, one of the people running out there, now he's a lobbyist for the big banking industry? I mean, really? Saying that we need to do away with Dodd-Frank? We need to, you know, we need to let those banks regulate themselves because they did such a wonderful job in the past. I mean, haven't they done such a good job? This idea that somehow they're going to voluntarily? I mean, really? I mean, at some point we've got to, you know, when you get kicked enough, when someone kicks you in the bullens enough, at some point, don't you go, hey, you know, I've learned my lesson? Evidently, we don't. I mean, we should be looking at Romney and going, no way are we going to let you anywhere near the economic engine, if you will. No way. Not going to happen. And if you look at that 60 Minutes interview last night, it's just, do you think you paying less of a tax than a guy making $50,000 a year is fair? And he says, yeah, absolutely. Because they have that entitled mentality. They're the job creators. They're the people who know what to do with the money. And they do. For themselves. Not for the good of the country. Not for the good of you and me and the people who work. No. For them. And I look at what Bill Kristol said this weekend. And again, he's going to lose his GOP member card if he keeps this. He said, look, Obama's turned around this financial crisis pretty well. Pretty well. He says, you know, if this election is just about the last 4 years, he says, look, that's a muddy verdict. Bush was president during the financial meltdown, he said. The Obama team has turned that around pretty well. He said Bill Clinton's speech at the convention was very important in that way. He said Romney has to go and make it a clear choice about the next 4 years and explain what Obama would do that would be bad for the country, and what he would do that would be good. And I agree with Kristol on here. You know, Romney's all, every question he was asked, and he was asked some very pointed, direct questions. Every question that he was asked, he deflected. Every question that he was asked, he turned it around and said, you know, it's Obama. Everything's Obama's fault. And you go, well, what would you do? Silence, crickets. And I look at the fact that Reince Priebus, on Sunday doing the talking head circuit with Stephanopoulos, said, well, you know, we've got specifics coming out of our eyeballs. So I'm like, well, name one. Because I'm not seeing these specifics. I'm seeing a lot of platitudes. I'm seeing a lot of finger pointing. Not seeing much in the way of how we're going to, if the ship is that badly broken in your mind, how are we going to fix it? I can tell you how I would fix it. I would fix it by changing our tax code. I would fix it by allowing workers to organize. I would fix it by doing a whole lot of things to encourage the bottom, much like a housing crisis. You know, as I said from the beginning, right when the bubble burst, make the people at the bottom whole. That's how you fix the system. Don't let the banks get bigger. In fact, nationalize them, break them up, and make them smaller and more competitive. But no, we didn't choose that route. And Obama didn't either. So, you know, he's not the great savior on that point either. But, you know, at the end of this, we got to start looking at tax policy. We got to start looking at, hey, how are we going to pay our bills? And how are we going to make sure that we educate our children and make sure we have roads and bridges that we can drive on and an infrastructure that's, well, that's worth a damn. And, you know, the fiscal cliff's coming up at the end of the year. We keep hearing about, oh, it's tax-mageddon. Don't you just love how they come up with these cute little words? I mean, it's great imagery, don't you think? Tax-mageddon, the fiscal cliff, it's the end. All because the Bush handouts are going to expire at the end of the year. And when they do, they're saying, well, you know, it's going to be the end. That's the end, and the whole country's going to stop. But you know, you look at just a recent report by the Economic Policy Institute are saying, look, sorry, if we allow the high end of the Bush tax cuts to expire, there's going to be virtually no economic negatives. there's going to be nothing. I mean, because understand, these people aren't using that money to create jobs anyway. And I had an interesting conversation over the weekend while we were in Philadelphia for the voter ID informational picket rally, whatever you want to call it, where we were out, you know, informing people, saying, hey, you know, this is potentially how you're going to be suppressed. Your vote's going to be taken away. And I met a number of people who didn't know that they weren't going to be able to vote. Hopefully they're going to get the proper ID that they need. If that stands, I'm hoping it doesn't. But that's for another day here. But, you know, as I'm looking at this and the conversation I had is, you know, we've been sold so much of this bill of goods. We've been sold so much that, you know, the tax breaks for the wealthy are, you know, we have to do this. There is so much money sitting in the hands of this wealth class that we've created. That, you know, there's part of me, and a big part of me that says, you know, this is by design. The idea is if they can just slow things down enough, make that black guy in the White House look bad enough, that they get their guy in, and then it's full pedal to the metal and more for them. But the reality is, you know, the more I look at this, the setup, it's just, well, it's a screw job from top to bottom. And you look at that Congressional Research Service report that we talked about last week, that the tax breaks that we've been giving out have actually created considerably more economic inequality in this country. And that, you know, what's going on is, think about what the Republicans are selling us. We need to cut taxes for the wealthy and continue those handouts for the wealthy, but we're going to cut spending on the poor. We're going to cut spending on programs that help people, so that we can give more in the hopes that maybe possibly, it's on paper it works, that if we give them enough, they're going to create a job or two, and maybe one or two they will, but not in the mass that we need. The Congressional Budget Office just did a report here recently that said, look, if we allow the Bush to hand at the high end to expire, that's going to be all right for the economy. It would be better than doing these massive austerity cuts to discretionary programs. It would be much better to allow that money to come into the government and allow those Bush handouts to go away than it would be to cut programs for the poor and health care and all of that. But we already know that. Austerity doesn't work. And it's interesting that Romney hit that point in the 60 Minutes piece last night. Well, he said, we're not looking to do austerity. We're just going to move things to the states. And, well, we know where that leads. And we're going to cut everybody's tax rate by 20%. And we're going to get rid of those workers on the federal level. And we're going to screw public sector workers and all of that. But that's going to be good for the economy in his mind. And again, I look at it, it just kind of makes me worry that if by chance he wins in November, we're in big trouble. Because I think we will be Europe. I think we will see mass austerity. I think we will see the double dip that people have been talking about that may be coming. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. Workers, from the unionized to the unemployed, were an enthusiastic part of the first anniversary celebration of Occupy Wall Street on September 17th in New York City. WIN's Melinda Tuhus was there and files this report.
Within the intentional chaos of the attempted reoccupation of Wall Street, as protesters snarled traffic in the financial district, Sam Talbot, with Unite Here, Local 100 in New York, stood out, waving a labor banner and leading what he called a swirl of protest. Early in the morning, he explained what his affinity group was planning.
We want to do a little tour of some bad employers and union busters. We're going to go protest at Chipotle. They won't make a deal with the CIW, the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, to pay a penny more a pound for the tomatoes. so that, you know, farm workers can get out of horrible conditions, or at least improve a little bit. The post office, they're trying to close all sorts of postal jobs, shut them down, and also the NLRB, because we want the right to organize for all workers.
Tammy Bick was a stalwart with Occupy New Haven, which created an encampment on the green in the heart of downtown and held it for 6 months before being evicted by city authorities.
I'm here to show people that they can empower themselves and that they can take back this country and that they can realize that we do not need to depend on greed, consumerism, and lies, and nothing but the bottom line being the important thing.
Turnout was hard to gauge, but likely between 1,000 and 2,000, along with hundreds of police who harassed the demonstrators and by day's end had arrested 185 of them, many of whom were randomly plucked off the sidewalk. Vic saw a contradiction there.
Unfortunately, the police still don't understand that they are pawns and that they're being used. They don't realize that in Scranton, PA, the police were knocked down to minimum wage. It's going to happen all over this country. You're going to be happy just to have a job.
Carol Brown lives in the Bronx and lost her receptionist job when the work was outsourced. Now she works temp jobs. She's a strong supporter of the focus on the 99% versus the 1%.
We got to focus on that, because that's like a way of talking about class. We got to focus on the people running the economy. It's usually they always attack the people on the bottom. They always go after race and gender and stuff. Because, you know, they always bring up that kind of stuff. That divides everybody. We're all workers. We're everybody's together. We got to focus on people on top who are controlling everything.
Melinda Tuhus, Workers Independent News, New York.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The Rick Smith Show, where work people come to talk.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Welcome back to the second hour of the program. To get a little housekeeping done. October the 6th, 6 p.m., we're going to be holding the We're Not Broke, the movie event in Carlisle at the Cumberland County Democratic Headquarters. Again, going to be showing the big film saying, hey, you know what, we can invest. As much as the Republicans tell us we're broke, as much as I keep hearing, wow, we don't have the money to fix our roads and bridges, and oh, by the way, we can't fund education, but we can give massive amounts of tax breaks to corporations, we can put huge, massive loopholes so Romney doesn't have to pay his taxes, and you go, oh, well, he paid 14%! Yeah, but had he done what he was supposed to do, as he said, we would want him to do, which was to pay only what he would legally have to pay, which, according to the numbers I'm seeing, was 9%. I think there's a serious problem there. Anyway, his running mate Friday was out on the stump, was in New Orleans for the AARP National Annual Convention, and again, going after Obama over the $716 billion that he keeps saying that, oh, Obama's going to take it, and he's going to steal it, and he's going to give it away. And you know, the same $716 billion that Ryan, in his own budget, said that he wanted to cut. I mean, this is another one of those moments where, you know, like my mother always said, if you point your finger at somebody, you still got three pointing back at you. And as Clinton said in the speech, it takes some brass to do that. It takes some pretty big stones to point something out that someone else did that you were going to do too. What I found interesting is Granny at the annual conference called him a liar, told him to go home. They booed him repeatedly. And why? Well, you know, his voucher plan, this idea that somehow we're going to have these premium supports. And the canard that they keep throwing out that this is just like the plan that the federal employees have. You know, the federal employee health benefit plan that they get to choose. And it's this wonderful system that they love to tout. But you know what? It's something that the employees bargained for. So on Friday, he gets booed at the AARP conference. On Saturday, he hits Orlando, a town hall meeting there at the University of Central Florida, where, of course, you know, someone asked him, stood up, "Oh, we love you, Paul." He said, "But I'm getting long in years. Will you address the death panels that we're going to have? Paul, can you please tell us about the death panels?" And Ryan, you know, interestingly, you know, doesn't tell him, you know, "You're insane. Stop with the death panels. That doesn't exist. What about the private for-profit health insurance companies that have virtually have panels like this to deny care all the time? What about that?" "Well, I don't want to talk about that." Ryan goes on to say, "Death panels, well, that's not the word I choose to describe it. It's actually called," he says, "it's actually called, so in Medicare, what I would refer to this board of 15 bureaucrats, it's called the Independent Payment Advisory Board." And yeah, that's what it's called. You know, they look at procedures and they say either this is something that is useful or this is snake oil. In any oversight body, in any program you're ever going to have, you've got to have someone paying attention to details. Now, this board, this Independent Payment Advisory Board, is included in the Affordable Care Act. And you know what? It's overseen by Congress. So what I find really hysterical is that you've got people out there saying, "Oh, they're death panels, and, you know, Obamacare is going to ration care." But you never hear them talk about the for-profit private corporations who have been denying care for years. And there was one movie I remember a number of years back. It was where this, you know, these people had gotten sick and the insurance company kept denying their care. And the mother was on the witness stand reading the letter that the insurance company had sent her. And at one point, you know, she read the letter and the guy had written her, "You must be stupid, stupid, stupid to think that we're going to cover this." Because that's how these companies think. If you have no ability to hold them accountable, if you have no ability to rein in the abuse, look, what the Republicans want, they want us to go back to the days of rescission. They want to be able to have insurance companies say, "You know what, 20, 50, 100 years ago, you did this. Sorry, we're not covering it. You are cut off at the knees. You know, when you were 14, you took that AZT, the acne drug or whatever, and we know it causes breast cancer. So now that you're in your 40s and you got breast cancer, sorry, you're on your own." That's the world they want to take us back to. They want to bring back the insurance caps. They want to kick kids off the insurance. They want to go back to pre-existing conditions. All of the things that I think are very good about Obamacare. Now, trust me, there are a lot of things I'm not happy with. But at the end of the day, this is the step in the right direction. And look, the Republicans understand this. They understand that this is just like Medicare was. It is the exact same scenario where people, they tried to scare people. "Oh, it's socialism. Oh, they're going to take away your rights." But you know what? The more people who use it realize it actually works and they actually want to strengthen it, which is why you're seeing poll after poll. People, 70% of people in this country are saying, 70% of people in this country, 70 to 80% are saying, "We want it, we want to keep it, we want to strengthen it." Think about that. In this country where we are so polarized, almost split right down the middle, the vast majority are saying, "We want to keep this and we want to strengthen it." Because when we're in our old age, we want health security. We want to make sure that we're not living on the street corner dying of illnesses that are curable. It's that simple. So I look at this, and again, you know, the death panels and the whole canard that they love to throw out there, which is just ridiculous. But it's what they do. So last night I'm watching the 60 Minutes thing, and I would, you know, say, this is where we got to be paying attention to all of this stuff. But Romney was asked about, you know, about health care. And he suggested, again, you know, you look at this and you go, what's the Romney plan? I like Romney Care. I think it was a step in the right direction. Ensures every child in the state of Massachusetts, everybody, something like 98% of the people have health care. Everyone's paying into the system. Everyone's part of it. Everyone has responsibility. You know, something Republicans used to believe in. Not so much anymore. But Romney was asked about health care. And he said, well, you know, we wouldn't want the mandate. And he said that emergency room care, you know, was sufficient. You know, because that's where the uninsured can go. He says, look, if someone has a heart attack, they don't sit in their apartment and die. We pick them up in an ambulance and take them to the hospital and give them care. Now, a couple of things. One, you kind of got to wonder what's going to happen once they take you to the hospital and they help you, because they have to by law. What they don't have to do is not charge you. So they're going to charge you the most expensive rate, the top rate, the non-negotiated rate, because understand insurance companies do a masterful job of bulk buying, and they negotiate lower rates for themselves. It used to be if you were paying cash, if you were a single person paying cash, the rate was cheaper because the doctor gave you a break because you were paying cash right there. Now what it is the insurance companies get the break, and you, oh, by the way, you're the one who gets stuck. So you're using the most expensive means of health care and harming people at the bottom, because understand, they're not going to just write off the cost of a heart attack. They're going to go get that money from somewhere. And it's going to be everything you've ever worked for and everything that you own until you're bankrupt and in the street. Understand that. I know people who have gone down this path. I know people who have had serious illnesses where, you know what, they weren't insured. And they didn't meet the criteria to get the poverty insurance, Medicaid. They made too much to get health, to get public assistance, but they didn't make enough to be able to afford it. And there's far too many working people in this country that are in that position. But Romney throws that out there. You know, they don't just sit in their apartment and die. You know, these aren't homeowners? No, because if they're sick, they're probably going to lose their house anyway, so they'll be sitting in an apartment anyhow. But it's this idea that, you know, the Republicans have continually thrown out there. I mean, Bush threw it out there a bunch of times. Now that Romney's doing it. That, you know, if you're sick, we have universal care already, they believe. If you're sick, you go to the doctor. And if you're going to die immediately, they have to see you. But let's say you've got a condition like my father-in-law, who has diabetes, and he needs to take insulin shots, and he needs to go to the doctor regularly for checkups, and he needs to be constantly monitored, because you know what, if it gets out of hand, well, he could end up back in the hospital for a longer period of stay. Now, if he didn't have Medicare, he would be in a world of hurt, because he barely has the income to be able to support himself. Think about this. If he weren't Medicare age, he wouldn't be getting the regular treatments, he wouldn't be getting the medication, he wouldn't be getting the insulin or the needles or the testing strips or any of that stuff. And thanks to the donut hole, he's still not getting all of the things he should be getting to make sure that he doesn't have problems down the line. Because understand, if we don't take care of these diseases early and you don't do a lot of preventative care, it's going to cost us boatloads down the road. And we know that, or at least we used to. I mean, I think about Benjamin Franklin, who said, you know, an ounce of prevention, pound of cure, apple a day. You know, we used to know that stuff. Somehow we've kind of forgotten. So you got Romney out there saying, well, you know, if you're sick, you just go to the emergency room. They'll take care of you. Or community clinics, because he believes that, you know, there's a way for the states to use clinics to fix somebody who having a heart attack. What I find interesting, in 2010, he said, look, it doesn't make a lot of sense for us to have millions and millions of people who have no health insurance and yet can go to the emergency room and get entirely free care for which they have no responsibility. To him back in 2010, it made no sense. Now he's touting, yes, this is the way to go. This is the way that we run a health care system in this country. You go back to 2007. He said, when they show up at the hospital, you know, those poor people, those ones without insurance, those poor people. He said, they get care. They get free care paid for by you and me. He says, if that's not a form of socialism, I don't know what it is. Yet, here he is touting that form of socialism. Does anybody have a problem with that? I mean, this guy is all over every issue. And then some. But for me, it comes down to, I could be at some point that person who's uninsured, as you could as well. We are all one illness, one job loss, one misfortune away from being destitute. And you have to understand that. And look, I love the idea that if you work hard, you play by the rules, you get ahead. If that were the case. The sad reality is, for too many of us, and I've met so many people over the years of doing this program and talking to folks who they just want the American dream. They want to work hard. They want to get up every day. They want to punch the clock. They want to do a good job. They want to be proud of the work that they do, and they want to be able to come home and look their kids and their family in the eye and say, you know what? I'm taking care of my family. I'm doing my best. I'm taking personal responsibility, and my kids are going to have a better tomorrow than I did. But sadly, what we're seeing, that American dream, we're seeing that ability to work hard and get ahead being destroyed. And you look at the reality. I just saw this report from the this health affairs study, who, according to the New York Times, right now, and this, it only makes sense. It's another one of these studies that makes perfect sense. The less education you have, I mean, it's pretty simple. The less education you have, the lower your life expectancy. White men and women without a high school diploma now live, men about 67 and a half years, women about 73 and a half. Those with a college degree, men live to about 80.4, women to about 83.9. So you look at this and you go, yeah, we already know that. Because generally people with better education have better health care benefits, which means they get to go to the doctor more often, which means that they get to get the medication and the treatments that they need when they need them. And, you know, you look at this, and it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure this stuff out. It doesn't take a genius to figure it out. It just is what it is. And at the end of it, you look at people who have the health care. You look at people who have the resources and the ability to weather the storm and to weather misfortune. Of course they're going to live longer. They're going to do better. Do we need another study to tell us that? Do we need more? I don't think so. And the more I look at this, the more we absolutely, positively, unequivocally need a national health care system. Again, Obamacare, a step in the right direction. Is it the panacea? Is it the best system we can come up with? Absolutely not. But what the Republicans are proposing, truly, absolute trouble. Let's take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of The Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
If you own a small business like me, you don't have time to spend doing all the paperwork, bookkeeping, and tax reporting. If you're like me, you want to focus all of your energy and attention on growing your business and succeeding. The paperwork's got to get done. The taxes have to be paid. Bob Miller, CPA, can help. Bob Miller and his experienced staff can handle all of your business's record-keeping and tax preparation needs. Thanks to Bob Miller, CPA, and the year-round attention of his staff, I don't worry about surprises when the tax reports are due. Bob and his staff can help you, too. They can accurately and professionally manage your business's accounts or your personal finances to ensure that you have access to all of the tax-saving opportunities available to you. Call Bob Miller's team today at 717-737-7617 or check him out on the web at www.bobmillercpa.com. That's bobmillercpa.com, and take the worry out of tax time.
I'm ready to do what has to be done for the next generation, with the courage to fight for freedom, with the courage to fight for America. That's why I'm announcing today that I'm running for president of the United States.
And when you look so gone and you're alone, how many nights you sit beside the phone? What were the things you wanted for yourself? Teenage ambitions you'll remember well.
Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of our program, you can download the podcast there from the website or on your smartphone. Get the Stitcher app. Take the program on the go. And that smartphone, probably made in China by the Foxconn people. Well, they had a big brawl last night, Sunday night about 11 p.m. In one of the dormitories. About 2,000 workers got into a brawl. About 40 people were taken off to the hospital. And you look at this and you go, well, what's the company saying? Well, they're saying, well, just a little personal dispute. A little personal dispute among a couple of people, you know, several employees, you know, a little hot under the collar. Local police were able to bring the situation under control about 3 a.m. So about 4 hours this brawl went on. And what they're saying is, well, the dispute's under investigation. Local authorities will look into it. You know, we're working closely, la, 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 la. Look, this is a place that has had really some high tension. I mean, workers who are committing suicide, workers who are, you know, just in conditions that you cannot imagine. And I look at this, and it's one of those moments where you go, you know, we lived through this exact time in history. We went through the same thing in this country, where workers had to fight, workers had to die for the right to collectively bargain, for the right to have a say in their hours, their conditions, their wages. They don't have that yet in China. They're working on it. Trust me, they're going through the same growing pains that we went through. And when they finally do that, well, the big multinational corporations, they're going to do the exact same thing they did here. Once you figure out how to make a living and how to have a little bit of a middle class existence, they're going to find somewhere else to exploit. Understand that. But you look at this plant where these 2,000 people were in this brawl. This place employs 79,000 people. It manufactures automotive components, consumer electronics, precision moldings, you know, your iPhones, you know, all of that stuff. They make stuff for Apple, Sony, Nokia. They are the world's largest maker of computer components. Foxconn employs more than 1 million workers in China, more than 1 million. And half of them are in their one facility, which borders Hong Kong. And, you know, we've been talking about Foxconn for some time because, look, you know, they've had a number of people jumping from the stairwells. They actually have nets in the stairwells so that the workers can't commit suicide. Think about this. These are the working conditions that we have to compete with. We have to allow conditions to get so bad that, well, that they're willing to bring the jobs back here. And you listen to Mitt Romney, you listen to the Republicans, they're all in favor. We want to be more business friendly, they say. Oh, need to be more business friendly. Why? Well, so they can make more profit. So they can have more power. And if you listen to President Obama's, you know, weekly radio address and his internet address, which he does every Saturday, you know, he's saying, look, you know, I want you to pass my jobs bills. I want you to, you know, all of the things that you left on the table, I want you to pass those. You know, like the veterans bill, the created Jobs Corps to help those soldiers come back to find jobs. Because you know what? We can't ship them off to China to do the work. The farm bill that's not going to get done. You know, maybe we should outsource our congressional work to the Chinese. What do you think of that? Now, I was just reading this, and the reason I bring up the whole Foxconn thing, understand that, conditions in this country are getting bad. Workers are losing their ability to have any right, to have any voice, to have any say. I mean, we may think we do. Oh, the boss has got an open door policy. Yeah. And he closes it right in your face. And I look at this story from Agency France Presse, who's saying, look, if you're Canada or you're China or you're any of these other countries that have been places where American corporations are moving jobs to, look out. Because, and this is a direct quote, marked by a drastic drop in salaries, the United States is again finding favor among manufacturers. So conditions are getting bad enough where it's cheaper to pay a little bit higher wages because of the shipping costs. It's cheaper because you're not dealing with the unrest, but it's not quite the middle class existence that my grandparents' generation and my parents' generation enjoyed in manufacturing. And even the president's out there touting it, saying, look, years after undercutting the competition, now it's getting more expensive to do business in places like China. And he points out the wages. He points out the shipping costs. He says American workers are getting more and more efficient. Understand this. American workers have always been by far the most efficient, productive workers on this planet. That's not made up. That's reality. The difference is that workers in this country have not been able to enjoy the fruits of that labor. As productivity goes up, it used to be wages and productivity were linked together. The more work you did, the more you got paid. The more productive you were, the higher your wages. What's gone on is productivity has skyrocketed. Wages have flatlined. In fact, they're actually going downward. We're actually seeing over the last 30, 35, 40 years a decline in the standard of living and in the bring-home pay of workers in this country. And why is that? Well, because we've been set up with these free trade agreements. We've set up with these agreements that we've got all around the world. That, hey, you know what? Just do what we want you to do on foreign policy and we'll give you some jobs. Because that's our foreign policy. And you look at the statement that he makes, that we're getting more and more efficient. And companies are coming back because we're more competitive. Like we weren't competitive before. He goes on to say, so for a lot of businesses, it's now starting to make sense to bring jobs back home. And I'm going, wait a second. This is where we need smart policy. This is where we need to have government say, if we're not competitive with the rest of the world, we need to figure out how to be, for one, but not in a manner that's going to race us to the bottom. If we're competing on quality, if we're competing on efficiency and productivity, and we're competing on who makes the best widget or doodad or whatnot, I'm in favor of that. When you start talking about who's willing to work for less, who's willing to destroy their environment, who's willing to kill their children in the future, I'm not willing to compete on that. That is dumb. But it's where we've been positioned. It's where the right and a lot of Democrats have put us. In this situation where competition business friendly means lower taxes for the very wealthy and less opportunity, education, healthcare, infrastructural investment for the rest of us for the future. That's what we're looking at, folks. But evidently, according to the Boston Consulting Group, they did a survey recently that pointed out that 48% of executives at companies with $10 billion or more in revenues say that they're considering or planning to bring production back to the United States from China. So, things have gotten bad enough. Things are now, it's cheaper to do business in the United States now because we've sufficiently beaten them down. We've sufficiently deregulated to the point where now we're in control. And I look at our trade agreements. Our trade agreements are absolutely some of the worst documents for working people you can come up with. Think about it. I mean, we've talked about it on the program for some time. These trade agreements, I don't know where it benefits me. you look at all of the jobs that were lost during the 90s. You look at all of the jobs lost in 2000s. You look at the jobs we're going to lose because of this Trans-Pacific Partnership free trade agreement that they're trying to ram through. And it's just not Republicans. It's Democrats, too. This is bipartisan. And understand, there's bipartisan opposition. There are people who see these trade agreements as the screw job that they are. The loss of our sovereignty, the loss of our ability to regulate what we do within our borders. And you look at the Charlie Tuna case, where Mexico said, well, hey, you can't regulate what kind of tuna we send you. You can't say that we have to use dolphin-free nets, because that's a restriction. That's a barrier on trade. Whenever you're positioning yourself for the least restrictive barrier, that is a race to the absolute. That's a free fall. It's not a race to the bottom. That is terminal velocity, drop to the bottom. That is the bottom. You are heading towards the abyss. But that's where they want us to be, because they understand in the two Americas that they envision, the one that, where they live behind their gated walls with their chauffeured limousines and their private jets and their private islands and little country clubs that you and I can only go to work at, they're safe. They're okay. They're secure. And they don't care about the rabble. They don't care about the unwashed masses. They don't care about you and me. Look at their operatives. Look at the Republican Party who skipped out of town. Because, well, we got to go back and be reelected. But what are you going to be reelected on? Did you do anything? No, they didn't do a thing. They did not. I mean, the fact that you would think that there's a bill to create a Veterans Job Corps. As the wars wind down and as we bring the soldiers back from overseas, you would think, since we've used soldiers and troops and the uniform and tanks and all kinds of stuff as props, you would think that there would be a bipartisan effort to push through a law, a bill, a set of guidelines, a tax credit, so that anybody who hires a veteran gets something, some money, a plaque, pat on the back, recognition, whatever. You would think they would do that, but no, they skipped right out of Dodge. And the farm bill, I mean, I cannot believe that here, we're talking about the end of the month, there being some pretty serious repercussions. And understand, we've got farmers and ranchers who, the producers who need to be bailed out because the natural disaster hit. We had major drought in this country. I don't know if you noticed that, but the farmers and the ranchers, they're struggling. So food prices are going to go up. Question is how high? And you go down the list of things that they didn't get done. I mean, there's a bill being talked about to get homeowners, a savings to be able to refinance their mortgage. Understand, the biggest cost in refinance is the paperwork. You usually have to come up with that up front, or you mortgage it for 30 years into the future, which is probably the dumbest thing to do. But there's a way. The president's saying, hey, let's push this, get people refinanced, fixed low rate, make sure that people can stay in their homes. Can't get that done. The jobs plan. I mean, the president's saying, hey, you got to do something on the jobs plan. You got to get people back to work. You got to do something. Invest in infrastructure. Anything, broadband, high-speed rail, roads, bridges, whatever. But the austerity party, no. No, no, no. Because that's all they understand. And the more you look at this, the more I pay attention to what is going on in this country. I'm not hopeful that the next 2 years after this election are going to be any different. Let's say the president wins. Let's say the Democrats take control of the House and the Senate. Let's just say. Are they going to have a filibuster-proof majority? Are they going to have the ability to pass anything? And the answer is no. It's no. So will we see more gridlock? Will we see more delay? Will we see more obstruction? Will we see more of what they're good at? Because as I said earlier, the Republicans are keenly aware. They understand They know without exception that they have the right political, they have the right political positions. They have the right political stance. Because if they don't win the White House, then they're on defense. Then they're the ones who are the obstruction. They're the ones who are saying, look, government doesn't work. Government can't do anything. Government's ineffective. They're inefficient. They're unproductive. And, oh, by the way, we're going to do everything we can possibly do to make sure that that is true, to make sure that that is the absolute honest statement of the year, because they can do that. See, it's a lot harder, and it goes back to my analogy of the carpenter. You know, it's a lot of work to build a house. It takes a lot of work to pour the foundation. It takes a lot of work to build the first level and to make sure everything's square and to make sure your walls are going up and your windows are in the right places and your door jams are all in. It's a lot of skill, a lot of work, a lot of time. But it doesn't take me much energy. It doesn't take me much work at all to tear it down. I can simply light it on fire and it'll burn to the ground. Or I can take a sledgehammer and I can just smash it to bits. That's easy. Which is what the Republicans are doing. This scorched earth mentality, this my way or no way mentality that has really put this country in a very negative position. And, you know, I like what Mark Twain said, you know, when he was asked to debate an issue. He said, "Well, I'll take whatever issue is the opposition. I'm against it. Whatever it is, I'm against it." And someone said, "Well, you don't even know the issue." He's like, "I don't need to know the issue. Being against it is easy. I can give you 1,000 reasons why not to do something. Where I maybe only give you 1 or 2 why they're good ideas. Tax cuts for the very wealthy. I can give you some good reasons why we should do it. Theoretically, they'll create jobs. Theoretically, they're going to spend that money on big ticket items that are made here in the U.S. They're going to employ workers. Theoretically, they're going to invest in infrastructure. They're going to build plants. Theoretically, they're going to use that money to benefit we the people. In practice, do we know that to be the case? Well, no. In fact, we know it to be just the opposite. They don't create jobs. They can only consume so much. And most of the jobs that they have created are in places like China, where they're going to get a much better return short term on their money than they would here. And that's the fault of government. But here again, you've got a Republican Party who's saying, oh, no. We want them to have open borders. We don't want to have borders to capital. We want capital to be able to fly all over the world where it can get the best return for our investors. We don't care about those workers. Screw them. Those are just workers. They're the people who make the sandwich behind the scenes, so when Mitt Romney pushes the button, he can go, it's amazing, it just came out, I pushed the button, it was right there. It was like, voila, and boom, it was there. That's how they view this. And I go back and I look at that video that Romney was taped on, talking about his disdain for the 47% of people who don't have enough money to pay federal income tax. And just the way the workers walked around and nobody paid them any mind. Didn't even notice they were there, like they were just invisible. And I guess to our Republican friends, people who work for a living, they are invisible. Let's take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people on the phone.
Yeah, that's true.
And he said he didn't learn how to be an American.
Right.
Now, how do you do that, Bob? I was born here. Don't that make me an American?
Well,
what I have to do to prove I'm an American, I am an American. I am.
I don't think I can even come up with something smart alecky to say, Juanita. John Sununu is just a man filled with hate, and his job has been.
Was he born in Cuba? Yeah, I found that out yesterday.
Well, I think his job actually has been to say outrageous things,
yeah,
so that Bishop's policy positions will be, because we'll, in the media, people tend to look at shiny things and go, oh, look, John Sununu said something else stupid. Let's not talk about Willard Romney's damaging policies. Let's talk about John Sununu saying something stupid.
And then, Tulsi's latest book, she, was on, she's promoting it on, what's the name of that show I'm supposed to be watching?
Oh, The View?
Yeah, The View, about a week or so ago. And she's rewriting the history of black people.
Oh, yeah, that was the day that, Whoopi ate her for lunch.
Yes, she did. That's what I was going to say. And the other one got pretty good in, too. But, and then, you know, this woman is failing or whatever she is, this creature. I was just making a joke, or
Yeah. They always hide behind that stuff.
Then I want to say something about, she's told you I want to bring up another thing, so I'll say. Back when we went to war with Iraq, have a great friend I've been talking about a lot, you know, that has a fake news that their mama got elected. And she said, oh, Juanita said, try to stay. I heard his sermon and he was explaining just why it was right for us to go to war with Iraq.
Oh, God, I can't hardly.
And I said,
I remember it.
You do remember it?
Oh, yeah, all the lies. You know, we don't want the smoking gun to be a mushroom cloud.
Well, this is Charles Stanley. She was saying, you know, him being a preacher and has to be respected, you know.
Right.
A lot of people think she's kind of mild, but I went and looked it up on the Internet, and I wonder what he said. You know what his basic song?
No.
It was when Jesus told the disciples to buy swords. Then it got on to him because they had two swords. So you said, who lives by the sword shall die by the sword. And this is his whole thing, and he was saying to the congregation, I bet you didn't know that was in there. I bet you didn't know that was in there. And he was using all of that to justify the Iraqi war.
Yeah, well, the Southern Baptist Convention used Peter owned a sword as its justification for backing George's slaughter of Iraq.
Yeah, and that doesn't make sense. Of course, I have never been able to understand it, but why did he ask him by a sword and tell him they should die by the sword? I mean, they don't even compute, Bob, in my mind.
No, it doesn't, and it doesn't compute in your mind, Juanita, because you have a normal functioning brain.
That's all I'm normal about.
You're not a bloodthirsty Republican.
Then another thing, I got a really not especially good return, you know, to a conversation the other day. I don't know if it's the same Rod, but Rod said I'm always watching David from South Carolina.
Yes.
Yep. And I was led to read who writes all these different things, you know, and they're not really long, but, you know, really in-depth things, most of them. And I just love them. And he was brought up about the Christians in the churches, you know, they're voting for a non-Christian and voting against the Christian. And it just came to me, I just made this little proclamation about what's on my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know I did. Anyway, I said, if he gets to be president, I wonder how long it'll take for this to become a Mormon nation instead of a Christian nation. I said, you think it can't happen? I remember that. Now, I met some good Mormons, I mean, people are wonderful, you know, that taste and everything. But anyway, I remember some of their policies of their church that they're the only true church. That's their teaching. And they definitely do not like the Catholics, and they don't like the other churches either. That's what I'm talking about from the top down. And my fear for the families from that is that you don't like to talk about anybody's religion, but people like Romney and Aaron and all, and Lindbeck and Carl Rove, you know, they're all Mormons.
And Rove? Is, well, wait. Rove is?
Yeah.
You sure?
I'm positive.
I'll be darned. I didn't know that.
And anyway, they, God does that to the leaders. If they're not for them, what they're saying, why don't the leaders of the Mormons speak out against these people for all of the things? I mean, they're horrible. These people are horrible. And I'm including Romney because, listen, I don't hear any truth at all. And don't think about it. You know, they haven't had answer to anybody. Now, poor old Kennedy, he had to go in and make speeches about why he
wasn't going to let the Pope control him. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But they haven't had to answer for anything.
No, because that would be attacking him for his religion. We're not even allowed to ask questions anymore, Juanita.
And you've got, like, what's this? The senator from Utah that writes religious songs.
Oh, no. You're talking about Orrin Hatch. The one that writes religious songs is Crisco John Ashcroft from Missouri.
No, that's not the only one.
Oh, really? Because I was thinking about Mormons. Oh, okay. Because I was thinking about the Eagle Is Sore or whatever it was.
Yeah, no, he's a Pentecostal. But anyway, the other one is a Mormon, and he's written songs. He's written a lot of so-called Christian songs, and he's written a lot of songs, you know, like
March on Mighty Laminates, or, you know, the Mighty Mormon Is Our God, or what?
Why did they be honored, these liars? I mean, that guy, you listen to him, and he lies one lie right after the other. And I had an obvious liar. And if he don't be a liar, be a good liar.
No, they're not even trying anymore. Willard yanked one right out of thin air. Wow, did you know that Chrysler's going to said the Kenyan Muslim's going to make Chrysler send all their Jeep manufacturing to China?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He just says it, and then he don't care.
Yeah, it's got to be. Yeah.
And then people say, you don't want to.
Right, and the people go, well, it must be true because the white guy said it about the black guy.
Yeah. And then another thing I wrote on, this is on my mind about, I've been thinking about it, and I wrote it on Facebook. Well, I said, I wonder how many jobs, you know, Romney has created over here that haven't gone to China.
I don't know that he's created any, except maybe...
Think about it.
Yeah.
And I get a response on that one from a girl I've known since she was a kid. And she says...
You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
She says, my job went overseas, but it was not because of Romney. But hey, I heard Michelle Obama say that during the past 4 years, her husband had created jobs, good jobs, jobs you could raise a family on. And that's not the jobs I've seen. Okay.
You can't even work with stupid on that level, Juanita.
I know it.
It is so good to hear from you. I'm gonna catch the next blinking light, but hopefully we'll be back here tomorrow night. Just, you know, cross your fingers for us, would you? All right.
I hope so too. My first and best wishes go with you.
Thank you, Juanita. You have a good night, dear.
You and your little family.
All right. Appreciate it.
Bye.
Bye now. It's always just lovely hearing from Juanita. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Speaking of stupid people, try to talk to Belkin Rowder.
Oh, good luck.
Yeah.
Which part of India did you get connected to?
Micronesia.
Oh, Micronesia. Okay.
It could have been the other side of hell. I don't know. You know, all of a sudden things are working fine, and then it says connected, but no internet connection and no IP address. So I guess that's the router. Something's wrong with it, right?
Not necessarily, Jim.
Well, can you enthrall me with your acumen, please?
I mean, without further diagnosis, I'd be hard-pressed, but, you know, we're in the... All I'll say is that you and I are both connected into the series of tubes by a cable company.
Uh huh.
And Competency is not either, and they're two different companies, but Competency is not their strong suit in either instance.
Yeah, suddenly.
But you've got your TV and you've got your phone, right?
Right.
And are they both through Suddenlink?
Hell no! I wouldn't have a phone through Suddenlink for anything in the world.
But the TV is, right?
Yeah. It's working fine.
I don't know. Before I made an assumption about the router, I'd be talking to Suddenlink.
I've talked to three people about that, but that's not your problem. It's just a pain in the ass. And what I need to do is get a wireless modem.
It might not be a bad idea. Well, I don't know how old your is, but you know the technology. It's constantly changing. So if you've got a modem that's more than 3 years old, it might as well be a Stutz Bearcat. Because
well.
Things obsolete that quickly. But I am deeply in your debt for the earlier email reference to Governor LePetitmaine, Jim. I giggled merrily when I saw that.
Oh yeah. Can you imagine what's going to happen here tomorrow? I'm glad I have power, but I try to deal with Suddenlink and all these women and stuff like that, and, you know, they just tell you, unplug this and unplug that. And finally, I got to a point where I wanted to tell them to put the plug.
I understand.
I'm sure you've been there yourself.
More times than I can count.
So how the fuck are you?
You know, we're just kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop. I'm glad I wasn't convinced I was going to be on the air, Jim.
I didn't think you were either, to tell you the truth.
But so far, so good. But then again, a lot of people have said that who have come to grief.
But, I could think of several.
Yeah. Obviously, things are a lot worse in other places.
Yeah. What have you heard? What's the sit rep on?
Well, I just heard from Andy, as a matter of fact, just seconds ago. He said the phones are out in New Jersey. He says he can't get through to his mom there. He says after seeing pictures of Atlantic City, you'll like this, Jim. After seeing pictures of Atlantic City, do you think Senator Inhofe from Oklahoma could now not only be called the stupidest man in the Senate, but has also justly earned the dubious accolade of being one of the stupidest crass Koch brothers propagandist sellouts on the planet, of our planet? Andy says, how many people will have to die in these catastrophes because of these global warming deniers, these happy fossil fuel political stooges, also known as the Repiglican Party? Remember Mittens saying Mr. Obama was going to keep the ocean water level down, and what a big laugh. Remember that big laugh he got at his convention on that, Jim?
Yeah, I'm afraid I do.
And now it doesn't seem quite so. Now it doesn't seem quite so silly anymore. And you know they like to these right wingers like to go and wail away on God. You know this is God's wrath on America for fill in the blank of whatever the right winger doesn't like. But the fact of the matter is, no, it's looking a lot like this is a desperate wake up call from the planet. But that they can't hear because they hate the planet anyway. They're just waiting, they're waiting to go somewhere else.
Well, you know, if Katrina wasn't enough to tell them something was wrong, and other storms, now there have been northeasters and stuff like this, but nothing that has crossed the entire continent the way this thing is, and we have not just, well, we have several sub-storms. Another conversion, do we not?
Yeah, it does. That's why they're calling this a Frankenstorm, because it's multiple systems being drawn together into something we have not seen before. I mean, this Atlantic storm is the largest in recorded history.
Yep. It is a vortex there, and it appears to be very slow moving and extremely destructive. And does it take New York to be flooded? Because we talked about this before.
Well, Atlantic City's underwater. Delaware's had the hell knocked out of it. I guess the core of the storm is coming ashore like right now.
Yeah, supposedly 2 hours ago, about 1800, I think.
I mean the very core is making landfall as we speak. And sustained winds in excess of 85 miles an hour, up in, you know, Connecticut underwater, New Jersey underwater. But no, man couldn't possibly affect the planet to that degree, right?
Oh no.
But I really would. I tweeted it earlier. I'd like to see Senator Inhofe row out to sea and report on the climate change hoax from there.
Well, maybe he should have been a passenger on that ship they use for.
Oh, the Bounty?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just wondered.
Apparently, CNN's even having a hard time keeping its picture of Anderson Cooper viable.
You know, what I don't understand is this. Why was that boat out there in the first place, knowing the storm was on the way?
The best I could.
Were they shooting movies or something?
No, that thing crosses the crosses back and forth from Europe to the U.S. and the Caribbean every year. And he was the ship's, as it was explained to me by Nancy, who knows a good bit about the sea and seafaring. He apparently left harbor because I guess they were afraid it would get beaten all to hell in the docks. And he was going to try to sail around it.
Well, I mean, number one, Thor Heyerdahl already did this once before on the Ra 2, but I'm sure he would not sail his ship into a conflagration like this because, you know, when they have to sortie the fleet to get it out of harbor, these aren't model ships.
No, and the fleet in Norfolk was sent out a couple or three days ago, I think.
Exactly. I mean, this was an absolute suicide mission for these people to be on. Oh, well, what can I say?
A square-rigged ship wiped out by 40-mile-an-hour winds and 18-foot seas.
Well, Davy Jones Locker, there it is. So what else have you guys been talking about tonight?
Mainly, this is it. It's hard to talk about much of anything else, Jim, just because so many people are in the crosshairs of it, and you know the water. Now he is standing in the middle of like the main drag in Atlantic City, and the water is now up to Ari Velshi's knees, and they still won't let the poor man come in. God Almighty.
I saw him earlier, and I cannot understand why they put people out like that.
Holding on to electrical equipment with water up to your knees.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, does it?
But the power is apparently still on, so that's. I mean, frankly, that's surprising. We've had many, many shots of the dangling boom of the crane in New York.
Yeah. Bob, I don't know. It's just absolutely the world just turned upside down. It really is.
Well, and again, the thing that I keep coming back to, one, this is you realize that this is 4 months to the day since the derecho hit us in June, right?
Yeah, I thought about that.
And so for everybody in this region, you know, Pennsylvania, Virginia, West Virginia, our power grid is strung together on a hope and a prayer. So that means the likelihood is even greater that we're going to lose power, and we're going to lose power for longer than expected. But that smirking sleazy grifter Romney was, I guess, still campaigning in Ohio earlier today when he said, "Well, I guess Ohio hasn't had a hurricane in a while." Well, Ohio was one of the states that got the snot knocked out of it by that storm 4 months ago.
That's where it came from.
Yeah, it swept right across Ohio, knocked the snot out of that, and then hit us. But, you know, this paragon of virtue and prayerful consideration, he doesn't even realize that. Because people in Ohio were without power just like we were, Jim.
No. You know, I told you about that man and what I think of him. I think he's absolutely, number one, asymmetrical in his behavior. And number two, he's just absolute nuts. And you know, speaking of the devil, the power is flashing over here, too. So, I mean, who only knows? That's the reason I keep a landline, a cell phone. And, you know, that's the reason I do that. But, I mean, what are the predictions in this area? Pretty bad?
When you get over to where you are, like, you know, Beaver, West Virginia is around 2,000 feet, isn't it? And it's anything 2,000, 2,500, well, from 2,500 feet and up, they're saying it's going to be just a book. And then below it, we're supposed to get what, six inches to 12.
They're talking about 2 to 3 feet here.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, Bob. I'll tell you, it's just an incredible situation. It's not.
Well, you've got everything you need, right? I mean, you've got your water and some candles and batteries for your flashlights and stuff.
Oh yeah. I wouldn't use candles. I can tell you that because I know of one crazy woman who would call me during stuff like this, and she would have nothing candles. I kept telling her, you know, you need to have some of the source of illumination, and the fool caught her hair on fire.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so what else is in the world that needs to fight this storm?
There is other things. The campaigns have pretty much
ground to a halt.
Yeah. Mercifully, but the filthy ads are still running. I noticed that. I guess if you want to talk about something gag-inducing, Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist, showed up on This Week with George Snuffleupagus yesterday. And in regard to the right wing's constant assault on women's rights and on, you know, all this evil stuff they've been saying about rape, Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich advised America to get over it.
Really?
Yeah. That's it. Get over it.
Well, that sounds like a typical response from that idiot. And that respecter of womanhood, doesn't it?
Sure. Meanwhile, cranky old John McCain says that the Obama administration's response to the attack in Benghazi is, and these are his words, Jim, you might want to sit down for this, worse than Watergate.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was kind of... Really? Worse than Watergate? But that's what he said.
Well, what do you expect from him? I mean, I can remember the Senate hearings between Abramoff and McCain, and how Abramoff had sluiced so many dollars to him, and yet they were sitting in judgment on Jack Abramoff, you know?
Right.
Now, maybe that's Kevin Spacey in the movie, but I don't doubt it.
Nor do I. No, John McCain is an incredibly sleazy individual, Jim. And, you know, this is a guy who has literally, from the moment he was born, supped on the federal teat. He's never held down a real job in his life. But he feels, you know, he feels comfortable talking about, you know, free market economics. And, you know.
Well, maybe it took the Viet Cong to get him to go to work, you know?
God, that's brutal, but it may be true. It may be the only honest work he ever did.
Well, I mean, it's just like they talked about John Barrymore and during the San Francisco earthquake, and he was, at the San Francis Hotel, and he was thrown out of bed and ran out into the street. And, of course, they had the Army there, and they gave him a shovel, and he was telling his brother Lionel about it, and Lionel said, well, it took an act of God to get him out of bed and the U.S. Army to put his ass to work. And that is a true quote, let me tell you.
Oh, I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it.
In spite of the famous profile and that type thing, you know. I always liked that, John Barrymore and a lot of stuff he did, but, I mean, he did have his problems, and you know, it's just incredible. I can't remember the name of the star. Oh God, it was Errol Flynn. Remember him?
Oh heavens, yes.
When Barrymore died, as a joke on Errol Flynn, somehow they got his body from the Undertaker, fully dressed. And when Errol Flynn came home, there was Barrymore sitting up in his teddy.
God, surprised Errol Flynn didn't just keel over on the spot. But then again, he may have. Well, there was a movie out there, Jim. It features Humphrey Bogart as a Mexican bandit, Randolph Scott as a Confederate general, and. Or maybe Errol Flynn is a Confederate general, but and somebody trying to stop a gold shipment. And that film was made as a matter of punishment for all three stars because they had all been busted, you know, in the old studio system. They'd all been busted for doing one wicked thing or another, and that's how you got punished. You got put in bad movies.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Hays Commission had a way of taking care of people who had transgressed and stuff like that. I remember when they got this...
But I will never forget the visual of Humphrey Bogart wearing that little flat top brimmed round hat with the little fringe balls hanging all the way around the brim, and a seedy little mustache trying to talk with, you know, imagine Humphrey Bogart doing a cheap Spanish accent.
I really can't do that, to tell you the truth.
Well, if you're not careful, you'll be watching Turner Classic Movies late some night and it'll be on and you'll view it in all horrifying glory.
Well, they all had their problems. I can remember when Errol Flynn got into problems with statutory rape, and he finally got out of way. Finally got away from that, and I think he put a sign outside it, his house or wherever he lived, saying that all girls had to show their ID because the one that he had gotten into looked a lot older than 16 or 18 or whatever. And then she called statutory rape on him, and he went through a big trial. It's all in that book called Errol Flynn, My Wicked, Wicked Ways.
Oh, and the name of this film is Virginia City.
Yeah, I've seen that thing years ago, years ago, years ago. Absolutely, absolutely. Well, listen, anything more on the political situation other than both campaigns have just stopped?
Not really. It's fairly quiet. And, you know, I think, who was it, Lawrence O'Donnell today said the campaign is for all intents and purposes over now.
Yeah, they won an October surprise. Boy, did they get one. Isn't it ironic that, number one, Hurricane interrupted the Republican convention back in Florida, and now, look at this.
Yeah.
It's as if the earth or a very angry weather god is not too happy with some of the stuff that's going on. It's just really...
That makes far more sense to me than hurricane's coming because two guys have picked out, you know, have had some bath linens monogrammed.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't.
But that's the argument they're making.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah. It's already started.
You mean like Romney and
no, well, you know, the right-wingers, the religion industry, the fundamentalists, you know, people who are going to run out and vote for Romney. Yeah.
Lord God Almighty.
This hurricane is God's judgment on America for its wicked ways, and our only hope is to return to decency by electing that Willard Romney.
I don't know. It's just incredible what people...
Well, in fact, I think it's much easier to explain it as saying, as Bill McKibben did, by saying, Jim, that this is the Earth's vengeance on us for letting the fossil fuel and hydrocarbon industry run rampant.
Well, Mother Nature certainly has a way of getting back at you if you mistreat it long enough, that's for sure. I mean, anything like that. You know, the Earth's ecosystem is just very much like the human body. And, of course, if you abuse and mistreat long enough, there are serious consequences. That's just the way I see it. I don't know. I don't know how you see it, but that's the way I see it, really.
Well, there's... It's hard to evade.
These are problems that very
well, and you know, Ray just pointed out that President Obama has a real chance to be a hero here. But there's a thing at work here that, I mean, if Barack Obama himself went and saved kittens from treetops in Atlantic City,
mm-hmm.
the right wing would ask what he had against dogs. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I mean, there are certain situations in which a person can do no right, and the only objective they have is to remove him from office as quickly as possible. And what is more frightening is this, even if he should pass the electoral process and pass, you know, the election being thrown into the House, then what they're going to try to do is to use the thing in Libya.
Well, and we know that because of Craig Unger's article from a month ago.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're pulling all the stops out. I mean, they're trying to get everything they can on this man to, just like they did Bill Clinton. And they had this big argument about, during the debate, about the response time that Obama gave. What was the Romney thing? It was like 14 days or something like that. And then they had some general ham. They said it was removed. And they were trying to say he was removed for cause. Well, it was a change of command ceremony. He was scheduled to leave Libya.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, listen, how badly is it snowing at your house?
It was when you know, darkness came, it was beginning to coat the ground.
Mm-hmm. And are you prepared?
As much as we can be. I mean, we've got water, we've got propane, we've got batteries, we've got gasoline for the generator and oil for the generator. We've got food and water. Right now, the joker in the deck is the roof.
How's it doing?
Leaking.
Lord God, Bob, how long has that team been doing that?
Well, it wasn't as bad. It was almost tolerable until the it wasn't terrible until the storm hit, and then the storm hit and just wreaked havoc with it. And we've been in the process of getting that dealt with, and then I mean, literally, I finally got a viable estimate early last week, and then this happened.
Well, as you said earlier, it's better to go ahead and lose a few more shingles.
Yeah, let it. If it's going to get blown off, But now what I'm worried about is the weight of the snow.
Let me tell you, I worked in a building near here, and the whole building collapsed because of it.
I remember, well, what was that, 1999, that huge snow?
96.
Huge snowstorm, and the entire roof of the Kroger's collapsed?
Mm-hmm, sure did. And knowing the people who work in that Kroger, I wish it had all been in there. But nonetheless, I shouldn't have said that. That was naughty.
Well, I remember driving by it, and one corner of the building was being held up by a stack of bread racks.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that concentrated water in the form of snow, once it keeps going, particularly that heavy, wet snow. And what they're calling for in this area is like 2 to 3 feet.
Yeah, and that's what's going to be the problem. This is going to be heavy, wet snow. The ground is very well saturated, which means the trees are going to be more easily uprooted. And if anything much above 60 miles an hour comes along, Katie barred the door.
Well, what are the wind speeds over there? Do you know?
They were just beginning to gust a little bit. It hadn't gotten ugly yet the last time I was outside. But that was about an hour before showtime.
Well, I certainly hope that.
Kind of wish I had an anemometer.
Yeah, I certainly wish you did, but nonetheless, it would at least give you the wind speeds. But
then again, if we're just going to sit around wishing, maybe I should wish I was in Hawaii or something.
You know, I think, buddy, I'm going to tell you this: the best thing you can do is to, if you can ever possibly do it, is to get the fuck out of this state. Because I can remember when you went overseas and all this kind of stuff, and you were out doing things that you enjoyed doing, and you were away from all this harassment of mountaintop removal and everything like that. You came back a changed man. Your gallbladder wasn't giving you troubles, and you were just transformed.
Well, and it is transformed.
And this is not a good place to live. And I hate to say it, I don't think there's a hell of a lot anybody can do to make it a whole lot better, given the mindset of the people who live in this state. I really don't think there is. There may be a few, but not many, and the powers that be are going to have their way. They're going to continue to blast those mountains apart. I mean, I called the Congressman's office about the AIC Act, okay?
Yeah.
And they said that in order for them to have any serious consideration of the AIC Act, and I'm not going to mention his name, okay, that they would have to have over 900 signatures on the petition that you'd ask people to sign online.
Well, hell, we've got 2,000.
Well, I know I signed on to it, and I sent you a thing, But that's what they said, 900. I mean, these people are so woodenly stupid and so stupidly wooden that even their assistants and their aides don't know what the hell's going on.
No.
Or if they did, they aren't going to tell you. They're going to try and discourage you from making your request that the particular congressman sign on,
Right.
So, I mean, that was the information I got or received.
Well, they were just handing you a line of bull, Jim.
Well, how many times have I heard that from people on Capitol Hill? It's just amazing. Our Congress, isn't it? Or our congressmen. We all hate them collectively, but individually.
We tend to think that, mine's a good one.
Yeah.
But even that has dissipated significantly, Jim.
Yeah, I think you're right. It has, in my opinion, too. Because basically what they're doing is up there serving their own.
I mean, here we are in the middle of campaign season. I saw our representative at a little local hamburger joint last week.
Yeah.
And, politicians are a certain special breed of creature.
Oh, and, I'm quite familiar with that.
And you would expect to see, not necessarily him going and shaking hands and kissing babies, But maybe somebody coming up and saying, you know, good luck to you. Or, you know, maybe some friend of Cole coming up and saying, you know, we're in your corner. Nothing. Nothing. Not a word. Not a peep. And he kept looking around like he was expecting somebody to say something to him.
I'll tell you, you can give yourself a treat. Talk to him when he's loaded.
Done that. Well, you remember the Beckley Chili Festival, right?
Yeah.
You know, one of the, back before it got so huge that you couldn't move anymore. You know, you could. It was kind of fun. You know, one night a year, you can walk around the streets of Beckley with a glass of beer in your hand.
Right.
Mind you, it's not very good beer, but you know, it's beer.
Well, you know.
But yeah, I had one of those conversations, and it was a Lulu.
And the upshot was, you wish you hadn't run into him.
Well, no, I mean, it's just like, you know, regular guy. But then all the regular is gone as soon as the beer is.
Oh, yeah. By the way, I heard that Boss Man Wayne got elected Democrat of the Year or something like that.
Yes, he is Raleigh County Democrat of the Year, Boss Man Wayne is. Glad you mentioned it.
Yeah, absolutely. How's he doing?
He's working his butt off. I think he's probably single-handedly responsible for the fact that there are actually Obama signs and yards in this area. Because he had some saved back from 4 years ago. And they are all over the place now.
Well, buddy, I don't know what to tell you about the other stuff. I hope that we can pass through the night, and I'll see what it's going to be like, to tell you the truth.
I hope you get your internet problems sorted out and
what I do is just unplug the damn thing and it comes right back up.
Right.
And when I go to my desktop it says connected or you know, connect, and then it says no IP address or something like that when I call SuddenSlink. And they are the most difficult people to in the world to deal with. I mean, they will send you all around and tell you to, you know, well, you got to disconnect this, and the head bone connects to the leg bone, all this kind of stuff. And I said, do you know what the hell you're talking about? Oh, yes, I certainly do. I've been here 4 years. I said, my point exactly. I said, probably the only place where you could be for 4 years if you were in a modern, real situation. Of course, I don't mean personal problems onto a public forum, but nonetheless, it's just a hell of a note. But I hope that you don't get more snow than you can deal with, but I hope that I don't. Lights have blinked several times over here.
I hope I'm not jinxing myself, but not even once here so far.
No, for God's sake, don't tempt fate. That's for damn sure. Absolutely. Do not.
I don't know if I can stand another one of those things where I'm not on the air for, you know, 12 days.
How long were you without power?
The last storm, 12 days. And then when they finally got the power up, it was another 3 days before we got internet back.
God, Bob, what did you do? You did the best you could.
Yeah, read a lot. You know, we got through. It was hotter than bejesus. You know, now it's a different question altogether. It's a matter of staying warm.
Yeah. It's just amazing how, like I say, this is not a very friendly place in which to live. It simply isn't.
It's not an easy place to live.
No, it's not. I mean, you have, number one, people who are absolutely idiots.
And I'm not, I'm not proud of the fact, but I actually went into Walmart on Saturday because I'd already been to Kroger's and there was no bottled water on the shelf. And I was just loading up with bottled water in case, you know, because you do that in these instances. Because when the derecho came through, we didn't have water for 3 days. And that becomes a real pain.
My Lord, what did you do?
We accessed some resources for toilet flushing, and apart from that, you know, we drank bottled water because I try to keep some always on hand, but I was pretty low, so I went into Kroger's. They didn't have any. So then, much to my own chagrin, I went over to Wally World and went in there, and my God, Jim, it was like Lord of the Flies. I mean, people, you know, the place was just crammed. People, you know, milk, gone, bread, gone, eggs, gone, water, gone.
Yeah. It's just amazing how desperate people are in situations like this. It really is.
Well, it falls apart pretty quick.
Yeah, I mean, really, the fabric of society is basically rent in twain.
It's tenuous. It is tenuous, to say the very least. I mean,
particularly when people are without power and without, you know, the necessities of life and stuff like that, and you really see how desperate and how evil.
Yeah, although, the lights are still on in New York, so that's a good sign.
Well, I hope that no seawater gets into those underwater conduits, because if it does, that's going to put that city out of commission for a long time.
That's a damn mess, is what that is.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And you know, there's the larger question to be asked or pondered, and this is more of an anthropological question than anything. We as humans tend to build our cities by the sea.
Well, yeah, that's natural because of trade connectivity and ports and stuff like that. That's what New York was at one time. Washington, the same way. I mean, before Washington in that area was Georgetown. It was a huge tobacco port.
Right.
Right on the Potomac.
But it begs the question of how smart is that?
Well, Bob, where can you build? Because if you don't build near the sea, you're going to build near some place where there's an earthquake activity and stuff like that. I mean, where is there a safe place to build a city in this?
Well, sure, everything has its drawbacks, but building right on the verge of the sea has got to be one of the, because if you look at the numbers, Jim, of the number of cities that are threatened by global climate change because of their geographic location by the water. It's a huge hunk of the population of the planet.
Oh,
by
yeah.
The way, Ray just dropped me a note. The streets of Manhattan are flooded.
Well, I'm afraid it wouldn't look too good for people in gondolas going up and down like they do in Venice.
No,
Venice certainly has this problem because they've been talking about, you know, New York having to have some type of floodgate outside that was built, you know, to withstand stuff like this and storm surges. And, you know, I sit right on those rails right by Canal Street. I mean, you know, right there at Battery Park. And I thought to myself, you know, it wouldn't take a whole lot but 12 feet to overcome. And
well, the official word that I heard earlier today, and it's a hydrologic term, but they are expecting the storm surge to be 11.7 feet above mean low water at Battery Park. Now, you've got a better mental image of that than I do, but, yeah, let that run around your head for a minute.
Low water basically is just, I think, a normal level of water beneath Battery Park, and I don't know. It's just this is not a very good time in which, to tell you the truth, Bob, it's not a very good time in which to be alive the way things are going on. It really isn't. I mean, it's just I feel sorry for the younger generation and what they're going to have to face.
Well, if the models are correct, and that's the larger point, Jim, if the models are correct, and if we understand that climate change is a very real thing, then what we are setting our grandchildren and great-grandchildren up to deal with, they will look back and they will curse our names.
I think you're right there. Absolutely. I mean, these are not normal things. I mean, the world has changed. I mean,
you know, there are a dozen nuclear power plants in the path of all of this crap.
But the only problem is when I address you in an email, as the power grid exists now and the demand for consumption exists and more customers plugging in, we can't drive it by wind and solar. They're going to have nuclear or some other type of power source.
I think that's just
my opinion. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but they're going to have some type of other power source. And I don't think wind and solar are going to be the answers that can keep the grid established and meet the demand. I mean, if you can tell me some other way, I'd be more than happy to listen to you.
Well, I think we're learning that the demand can be met. It's not so much a matter of demand because, I mean, for God's sakes, there's enough wind potential in one little corner of North Dakota to power this country two or three times over. The problem is distributing it and getting it from point A to point New York City. And that's the problem that hasn't been solved yet.
I see. So it's not the manufacturer, it's the distribution.
Right. I mean, there's enough solar energy in a few square miles of Nevada, again, to power this country several times over. But you've got to get it from out of that square, that relatively small space, and onto a distributed network.
Well, that's a big problem.
And that's why the larger question is one of, and folks in the chat room, people like Grant who reads on this a lot, can tell you that, you know, that's why the power grid as it is presently envisioned is a distributed grid on a grand scale, on a macro scale, where the real brilliant, you know, head-scratching thinking is going to come in is when we figure out, and for instance, the Germans, one of the reasons that I was a bit transformed by that trip in May, Jim, was because I saw a nation, and by dint of necessity, you know, because that's how Germans operate. They do what they got to do,
mm-hmm.
You know, when they're not in the middle of, you know, the unpleasantness. You know, they pretty much ran through their coal. They don't have any oil, but they do have wind, and the sun does shine there. And so, lo and behold, they subsidize the installation of solar panels. There are wind turbines all over the place.
Right.
And so they don't just have a great big grand grid. They've got micro-distributed grids. Here we are sitting having a national conversation, Jim, in this country about how long is New York City or Philly or Boston or, you know, pick one, going to be without electricity, okay? Well, understand that, for instance, where we were out of power for over a week in late June and early July because of a freak storm.
Right.
On average, the Germans experience something like 27 minutes a year of power outages.
Yeah, I remember you saying that. And, of course, you know, you and I had a long talk earlier a couple of years ago about the infrastructure of this country, whether it's power grid, whether it's bridges, whether it's highways, whatever, and how every 2 years the American Society of Engineers, or whatever they're called, do a report card, and it was like D-.
Yeah. And you know, that doesn't happen by accident. And it needs to be remembered, our power grid doesn't necessarily go down because of the force of the storm. Our power grid goes down because of the inefficiency and insufficiency of the power grid. You and I both pay a power bill to a for-profit electric company. That means that its monies have to be plowed back into shareholder the dividends instead of necessary infrastructure.
Absolutely. I mean, the money's going the wrong way. It's going into Wall Street and the investors, and it's not going into the improvement of the system because, I mean, these are mechanical things, and they can only last so long. And if they're not, maintained, if they're not properly cared for, then it only takes a snap of nature to render them totally and completely useless and ineffective, and they fail. They really do. It's a messed up situation. It really is.
But so many of these problems have been brought about, Jim, specifically because there is an element in this country that has given up on the idea of government.
Oh, they don't want government to have anything to do with their cash cows, that's for sure. They don't want to have any type of regulation. They get upset if the EPA imposes standards. They get upset if the FDA tries to impose standards about food and this, that, and the other. And these idiots simply hate anybody who's going to stand in between them and their cash cow. And that's it. And to have, you know, hooray for me or them, and to hell with everybody else. I mean, they don't care if people go without light or without food or without power. And they get upset about food stamp programs because there are people who need food stamps. They get upset about every type of social program that's designed to try to inspire any type of humanity.
And yet, consider, like I said, I've had CNN running in the background. No audio, just video. Consider that in the last 2 minutes, the two ads that have run on CNN have been for ExxonMobil and Norfolk Southern Railway.
Wonder why.
And we wonder why we can't get any kind of meaningful coverage of climate change.
Well, you know, Bob, as far as the railways are concerned, I think we should have definitely invested in the railway system the way Europe did, because railways are a much more efficient means of transporting goods.
And let alone efficient, pleasant for transporting humans.
Oh, yeah, well, they don't care about that. I can remember when the train used to be fun, when we used to, you know, leave Camden, South Carolina. It's like, 8 o'clock at night and be in New York about 10 o'clock the next morning, and you could have a roomette or whatever you want, and go to the club car and, you know, do whatever you want to do, and then go to sleep, and you'd wake up in Grand Central.
You would not like the ride now.
No, and I can remember when they had linen tablecloths and flowers on each table, and they had excellent food and this, that, and the other. But they just completely neglected the railway system in order to use these big trucks that use all this fuel.
But it's not just that. Remember, the railway died at the hands of the airlines.
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely. People just had to get there so much quicker, so much faster, and the airlines did kill the railway. And God only knows, those monsters certainly use enough fuel when they take off. That's for damn sure. Well, look, I've taken up enough of your time.
Well, it's been a lovely conversation, Jim. And you stay
really
safe. No, it has been. You stay safe. Well,
you too. And I hope your roof holds up and your family gets through this. I hope is this supposed to be over like Halloween or something like that?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. I can only say this, man. What a trick or treat this has been, honestly and truly. My God in heaven. Oh, boy. It sure picked up.
And remember, New York got Irene this time last year. The northeastern seaboard got Irene this time last year. And again, this is the end of October. And this is a storm. Okay, consider. This time last year, it was Irene. That's the letter I. A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H. That's 8 letters in last year. This is Sandy. This is a few letters from the end of the damned alphabet.
It's not very far, is it?
It tells you that there's been a lot more storms.
Well, it is a lot. It is pretty far. I really absolutely.
Sandra just sent me a photo of 34th and 1st in New York City. Underwater.
Oh, God, this afternoon it was almost up at the MetLife building on 57th. I don't know, buddy. I tell you. Anyway, I wish everybody well who's within the sound of my voice. And I've got one last thing to say, and I guess it's not really appropriate, but here it is.
Happy Halloween!
Indeed. Agnes was supposed to have spent the weekend with the grandbabies Halloweening with them, and that all went sideways, yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, listen, you've got other callers, so if you don't mind, could you just, like, leave me on? Or
yeah, I'll put you on hold.
Okay.
All right, stand by, Jim.
Y'all have a good evening.
You too.
Bye.
Our good buddy Jim. And onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good evening, Rob.
Hey, what's happening, Kevin?
Not much. Sorry to hear about all the trouble out there.
Oh, I ain't got the half of it yet.
You know, I was thinking about what you and Tracy were talking about earlier. You know, these religious nutcakes talking about this is all because of the gays and lesbians. And 30, 40 years ago, it was because of the pornography and things like that, and then
communists.
Before that, it was because of interracial marriage, and before that, and my point is it goes back to that old. I think Dietrich wrote it, but you know, they came for this person and that person, and finally they came to me. And these religious people just seem to play into that. Come on, people. You know, really? This is because of Tracy? You know? I mean, really? You're telling me that this big storm that's going to affect untold millions of people is because of the gays and lesbians? I find that hard to believe.
But they're a simple-minded lot.
Yes.
And it is far easier, and maybe this is a human failing, Kevin, but it is far easier to believe that some sort of divine justice is being meted out because your deity hates all the same things you do than it is
right.
To consider that we may have a problem. Because, you know, just as I've often said that fundamentalists reject evolution because it would compel them to find kinship with people of different skin tones.
Yep.
Well, if you admit something like global climate change, then if you read the science on it, you start finding out that things may be even worse than anyone has said, and it may be beyond the ability. In other words, it winds up being an intellectual challenge, or they perceive it as an intellectual challenge to their precious faith.
Yeah, but it seems to me to not be very much faith at all. If you have to blame something, what do you do when the tornado hits your house if you believe like that? What sin were you committing that God punished you by causing a tornado to hit your house? You know, that kind of thing. And it just drives
But see, that plays into the element of substituted punishment. These fundamentalists believe in a God who does group punishment. That's why they can look. That's why they can just turn a blind eye to the plight of the Palestinians. And so, yeah, well, sure. It turns out that tornadoes tend to strike more in places filled with fundamentalist Christians than they do places full of. But you know what? God does that. God will wipe out an entire city if He's decided that He hates a particular gay bar.
Right.
That's
right.
How their mind operates. And it is brutal, it's hateful, and it's certainly not anything that I want to associate myself with.
No, but I've been in these churches, I've met people that are very smart that believe this, and I just, what? You know, it doesn't compute when you meet a person with an IQ of, say, 150 who's believing this stuff. You know, it's almost some form of brainwashing that's going on. And you watch tomorrow. I'll make two predictions. One, Pat Robertson will get sanctimoniously on his program and talk about how it was God's punishment for this, that, or the other reason. And two, Mitt Romney will try to make political points out of this. Within maybe 3 hours of dawn, about 9 o'clock in the morning or so, I guarantee you Mitt Romney will come out and say something about how the president's response wasn't correct or something. There will be something he will do.
Oh, yeah.
And it's totally inappropriate time to do it, but he will do it. And I'm hoping it'll backfire on him, of course, but, you know, the election's the first thing. You know, you talking about them talking about delaying the election because of the swing states being affected.
No, well, that's the Republicans saying that, yeah.
Yeah, if you listen to...
And then Obama's going to declare martial law, and we're all going to get rounded up into FEMA camps.
Right, right. And if you listen to some of these coast-to-coast at night, you know, they talk about how the weather is being manipulated and how President Obama had our people direct that hurricane to go right over New York City so he could delay the election. And you just, you know, like Jim said, the world is just going upside down, you know. And that's another thing I wanted to mention. Tracy started to say something about how fearful she is over this election. And I've got to admit, that's where I am. I have never been afraid over an election before. From anything to county commissioner to president, I've never worried about the consequences of an election as much as I do with this election. And I just want to put that out there, because what do we do if we wake up on Wednesday morning and it's President Romney? You know, and I'm not so much afraid of Romney. That's fearful enough, but it's the reaction of these right-wing people that scares me the most. They will be emboldened to do even more damage than they're doing now. And they will be even more emboldened to do and say things that are racist and just, you know, that's what I'm scared of. It's not, I'm afraid of a Romney presidency, obviously, but it's not the presidency itself I'm afraid of. Like Jim was saying, the people in the back hollers of Arkansas that have 2 or 3 feet teeth in their mouth, and they don't want that Kenyan Muslim elected. And now that President Romney has been elected, we can go back to blaming storms on gay people, you know, without getting any pushback at all. That is my fear. And, you know, I don't know what else to say other than that. It just, you know, you look at someone like Tracy, you can tell by listening to her over the phone, she's a very nice person, she's someone I'd like to know personally, and her girlfriend, and why would God do something to Tracy? You know, it doesn't make any sense to me. And
but it doesn't make any sense to you, Kevin, because it's senseless.
Yes, that pretty well covers it. But how to get that out to people that you're betting against your own best self interest, what a magical thinking. You know, you've got this magical thinking complex that everything is because of God, as Mike Malloy likes to say. God, G-A-W-D.
That's God.
Yes, yeah. And
meanwhile, Pastor Hagee's somewhere out in Texas saying, starve!
Exactly. How? Wait, how did it get to this? I don't understand. This is not...
Well, the only answer to that, Kevin, is to just reiterate at the risk of sounding like a broken record, it is by design. There have always been an element in this country of people who wanted to destroy anything resembling self-government, and they are in the ascendant. I mean, my God, we don't even begin to know what the outfall from what's going on right now is. Well, the water's up to poor Allie Velshi's waist now. That's in Atlantic City.
Allie, I think it's time for you to take cover, girl.
Boy. Feller. Guy. Yeah. Allie's a guy.
Okay.
Yeah, but anyway, meanwhile, you know, Andy tells me 34th and 1st are underwater in New York City. Battery Park is underwater. And he says, my prediction, we're talking some big-time damage to the subway system in New York. It'll take them weeks to get back to normal operation. Now the officials in New York are reporting that seawater is rushing into the Battery Tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
But there's no such thing as global warming. Just
right, and you know, remember, Willard Romney has said that the private sector could deal with this disaster better.
Right.
Just like the private sector could have done better with the auto bailout, except for the fact that there was no private sector money available.
Yep. Yep.
Now, when I'm off the air here, I'm going to turn the audio back on and listen for him to explain to us what this is going to do to the precious holy markets.
Yep. Well, you know what? You don't even have to turn on TV to know that. You're talking about the subway system. It will take years to repair the damage from this. They'll get back to some semblance of normal within a few weeks.
Well, at least we don't have George Bush out at somebody's birthday party playing an upside-down guitar.
We got Mike Brown out here on the radio, though. He's on one of the local stations up in Denver, and we can always turn to him for advice.
Yeah, heck of a job. Hey, Kevin, have a great evening, my friend.
Hey, Bob, thank you very much. And
hopefully we'll be back tomorrow.
Yep.
I'll tweet as we go. Take care.
All right.
Bye now.
Bye.
Kevin calling from Colorado Springs. Email coming in from Kate. She says, enclosed is $60 to go toward tonight's goal. Is there any way you can separate the funds so you can buy extra fuel? If not, consider these funds to go toward domestic survival and comfort. That is more important to me than the unpaid bills. She says, my heart aches because our society is so jingoistic. We aren't the only ones who are being hammered by weather. Millions are threatened in India by Cyclone Thane. Maybe that's Tom. Many have died in the Caribbean from Sandy. I'm so glad I don't have a TV, Kate says. We queers have been busy. Remember, we took down the trade towers, too. Sending y'all fairy dust, she says. Kate. Thank you, Kate. And so I'm glad we were able to get this show under our belt. I hope we'll get another one under our belt tomorrow. We shall see, won't we? If you are in the middle of all this mess, and we have barely been touched so far, it's just a matter of snow so far. The worst may be yet to come for us. But if you're in the middle of all this mess right now, please do whatever is necessary to stay safe and know that you are in all of our thoughts. I ain't gonna pray for you, though. Mm-mm. Don't do that. Thank you, everybody who makes all of this happen. First of all, and foremostly, those of you who contribute kindly to keep all of this going. It is appreciated in more ways than you know. It's why we're still here, working on our 8th year. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, our news ninjas Gene and Susan. Thank you to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to Agnes. Thank you to John Fox. And thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. 10 years now, there's been progressive liberal radio available on the Internet, in large part because of the often unheralded efforts of Ben Birch. Thanks go out to the bravest, hardest-working people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and ACHEACT, A-C-H-E-A-C-T, .org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.